Hey, it's Cynic here. This week we actually did a live broadcast, so what you'll be listening to here is an audio conversion of that show. So, you'll be hearing some game audio and us commentating on what we see on screen, but for the majority of the time we're actually doing a normal podcast. Because of this, you may all want to stick around here and listen to the MP3, but for the best experience, check us on youtube.com/thelincolncast, one word. So to repeat that, youtube.com/thelincolncast, one word. Have a great week, and next week's episode will probably go up on Monday the 18th, and will be a normal episode. Thank you. This is the Giant Bomb Community's Guild Wars 2 podcast. We're doing something different this week. We're going to be broadcasting live. What you're seeing here on screen, and I'm watching it with you, is us in World versus World this week. And what we've got is a bunch of Lincoln Forces, which is our guild. We've gotten together. We're going to take on something interesting. Hopefully, we're going to put on a nice show. But we also have a couple of things that to fill out the show like a proper Lincoln cast. So we do have a bit of news this week. We also have some topics from the AMA, which was held a couple of days ago. So joining me today in the game and who you're seeing on screen and the perspective for the show is Durin. Hello, Durin.
Hello.
We've got... It's
sexy.
There's so much energy. So much energy. Oh, my God. It took so long to set up. And now we're sitting here and we're so tired. We've got Shav the World with us this week.
Hello. It's 2 a.m. here. I'm all the way tired.
Yeah, dude. This is not... Why did we do... This is a terrible time slot. We should never do this again. Oh, God.
During sexy character, I'll keep you up. If you know what lady, I'm saying.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Way. Oh, God. And, and those sultry tones something you're hearing, and it's Noobaran. Hello, Noob. And quickly moving on is a new guy to the show. It's Zumi Ramen. Hello, Zumi Ramen.
Hello. I'll be the excitement of the show, should I? I'll be the energy.
Yeah, you'll be the energy. That's how it rolls. It's doing something different this week. I think we've heard Shav the World before and Noob before, and obviously Durin and me. But Zumi Ramen's actually... Shav the World is totally one of the founders of the Lincoln Cast. But Durin, aside from that, Zumi Ramen's actually hasn't had too much experience with the game. You have a little bit. I think you got about, an hour or two today?
Yeah, I got an hour and a half because I couldn't log on like a little scumbag who wouldn't let me on. So
yeah, exactly.
Right, I've only played an hour and a bit.
Was that any like? Was those issues? What was the actual issue in the end?
I don't know. I was just getting some weird error codes about logging on, and then it just let me on. So it might have been a problem like people logging too many people, right. Or maybe they're just racist and they don't like the British.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's more likely that they don't like the British, though. Let's be honest.
Oh, I don't like the British. Wait, who here likes the British? We got like three, four people.
I don't like the British.
I don't like the British. Well, clearly I don't. I'm American.
Exactly. Oh, God. Assassin's Creed 3. That looks... Anyway, so quickly moving to the show. What we're going to be doing is, I guess you can get them, you can catch up with the rest of the team. I think Kale's with you and Kat's with you. But you can do whatever you want now, Durin. So if you want to run us through.
Yeah.
So what we're showing on screen before we go into topics this week, and I don't
think... Guild Wars 2.
Is Guild Wars 2. Like, this is the game. This is the game we've been podcasting about for, like, weeks on end now.
Like, this is the first time I've seen it live. So this is exciting for me. I've only seen pictures and, like, recorded videos on YouTube, but I haven't seen the game itself until now. Wow.
God, stop lying. Wait, so we've already played, what, like, 6 hours today?
Yeah. Oh,
so good.
Not me. No, thanks, guys. I've been watching the stream longer than I've been playing the game, I think.
And so what they're doing over here is we're actually in World versus World at the moment, and so what's happened is we're in Yak's Bend. I'm not sure if you are aware of the actual server, but we've pretty much taken the entire map in World versus World. So what the guys have stuck with now is Robbie Mack, who you can see on screen now, is going to be leading the team. I'm not sure what he's doing in there because we can't really hear what their mumble chat's doing. But it's the plan is for them to extend our lead, our ridiculous lead, over everyone else. So I don't know what they're gonna do. We don't have any control of the experience. Durin may have some interaction with them, but aside from that, let's just see what they do. And there you can see the map now. So we've got pretty much everything. I think, what, 2 maps left to blue, about 4 maps left to green. I'm sorry, guys. I was hoping it was something interesting to show.
Domination.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we're totally using world versus world, you know, and I have, like, some interesting combat and maybe some, like, actual, like, keep taking and stuff like that to show to the guys, and then, nah, we did all that before the show even started.
It's like a world versus village.
Yeah, so there you go. They're talking in team. Tezia is Durin, and AX is another one of our guild members. So what you'll see as we move into topics, and I think we'll start soon enough. Wait, does anyone have anything to say, Chav? Did you have anything to say? I just interrupted you. I'm sorry.
I just said Benny. I was saying who's in the name of AX. Heartrend. Can't remember.
Cool. I would like to
applaud ArenaNet on server names. I mean, personally, Yak's Bend is probably one of the
most place in Guild Wars, the original, the Guild Wars.
Yeah.
Somewhere was called the Yak's Bend in, right, okay.
Yep. It was a bend full of yaks.
There was a bunch of yaks there in the corner. There was a tiny little village. It was awesome. It was awesome. But anyway, so...
That guy's huge. Sweet. Oh my god.
Yeah, he is huge. Oh no, they do. Anyway, I guess don't really have to talk about what everyone's been playing this week because we've been playing some games too. But just to get some reactions around the table, Zumi Ramen, how was your first 1.5 hours with Guild Wars 2? Or your second 1.5?
It's confusing in places. Like it's a very busy game. Like there's a lot. You're placed in it. And then, like, you're instantly sort of fighting, you know, you're instantly getting quests and stuff. And because obviously there's not, you know, really a quest log and pick up quests, you're sort of like, oh, by the way, you need to go kill these guys. I'm like, all right, okay, I'll get on that. And then, I don't know, I enjoyed it. I think, there's a lot going on. There's a hefty amount of stuff going on, and it's quite cool how it throws you into the deep end.
As you say, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on the screen. Like, if you see that,
there is a lot going on.
I'm really distracted by what the hell's going on the stream.
Because what's happened there is there's a thing you can buy with gems, which is like the money you, the currency you get for exchanging real world dollars in the game. But for these weekends, they gave out a bunch for free. So there's a couple things you can purchase on there, and one of them is called the I think it was like the box of laughs or something like that. Box of fun. And if you click on it, or whoever clicks on it, something weird happens to them. And as you can see, he's tiny now on screen, which is kind of weird. Tiny.
So this is World v. World Combat, guys. In the middle of this like epic fight, you're going to be turning into rabbits and stuff. That's how seriously we take this sort of thing.
Exactly. Like, in the grand tradition of the Lincoln Cast, we're only producing really serious content. Really, like, well thought out, well planned, on time content.
Right. I mean, this is the untold story.
It's really popular with the masses, too. Like, all Lincoln Cast content.
Yeah, exactly. And for a gigantic viewership, like, in the end. Yeah. Anyway,
like, look at these single-digit numbers. These are pretty good. Like, these are high single-digit.
Woo!
Well, you've got to start off very, very small. Yes. Like, you've got to start off with a tiny nebulous, and then you grow. Yeah. And then in 20 years, you have 13 viewers. So, we'll get there.
Maybe. I don't know.
I think you're getting a bit over yourself. 20 years, 13 viewers. Yeah. I think we'd still be, like, 9.
Exactly.
That's only because we'll have 9 people talking on the podcast.
Right. Oh yeah, definitely, and we'll keep it 1-to-1 as much as we can as the years go on. Shav, what did you do today in Guild Wars 2? Just as a quick run through, what have you done? What did you enjoy? I'm not sure if you can hear me here. On my end, everything's going dark.
I think he's fine.
I can hear you. I can't say anything because I haven't played any Guild Wars.
Oh, you haven't played today. Right, so
I stupidly didn't download the 5 gig patch that apparently came out earlier in the week.
Oh, ouch!
It's went over my head. So yeah, I booted it up 2 hours before the event started and was like, nope, not Len. All right.
Yeah. Well, I'm more concerned by the fact that when there's a question that you don't have an answer to, you just give them abject silence.
Yeah, I thought I dropped out there.
I was expecting somebody who actually played Guild Wars 2 to chime in, but no, apparently no one wants to talk
about it. I'm going around the table on this one. Edmund, sorry. Oh, wow, fourth wall. We shouldn't be breaking it, right? Noobarama.
Wow. Who's Edmund? I don't know who that is.
Exactly, huh? What? Who is Edmund? What did you end up playing today? And how much
Well, I played... Well, I... What did I do today? I don't actually remember. What the hell did I do?
Seriously?
Well, so I started off my morning with some, What the hell did I do? I think you're asking too much, Skip.
Oh,
I
all I don't
okay,
ask
no, I tried out World vs. World. And basically, like, my game kept on blue screening, so I ended up uninstalling my video card drivers.
That was the majority of the day, right? Because you had
like
drivers.
No. So I uninstalled my video card drivers, and then suddenly 40 gigabytes of my hard drive becomes free. So I'm assuming Catalyst took 40 gigabytes of my hard drive.
Yeah, there you go.
And then it stopped blue screening, but it kept on freezing. So I don't know whether or not this is a good thing. So I've been just been playing PvE, because PvP... is just all bad news for me.
Yeah, and I have to say that even though you guys haven't had too much of Guild Wars 2 today, the stuff that me and Durin did... Durin, are you there to chime in?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
And they can hear you on the stream, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what we did was something called like a mini-dungeon in War vs. World today.
Oh, my God.
And I use the word dungeon in air quotes because at the time we owned pretty much the entire map, so it was only Yak's Bend people in there, so there's no enemies.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine doing that thing with enemies in there as well. That
Jesus.
Those jumps were the enemy.
So what he means there is, and we made sure it's the end of the stream today, what they're doing now, if you're wondering, is they're sneaking across the waters to attack some of the bases that Blue's currently holding. And we're red, by the way, in case when you saw the map before you didn't understand. So essentially, in this world versus world structure, in the main map, which is the Battle Isles, there's a mini dungeon now, which is just added to the game. And what it boils down to, when you're like us and own the entire map, is a sequence. I'd say the content would be about 2 hours long. Like, it would be like if you ran it through and you actually knew how to do it, it would probably take about 20 minutes. But on our first time through, what it boils down to is a series of really complex jumping puzzles, like platformer stuff, harder than most platformers, jumping puzzles.
Super Meat Boy.
Dude.
Super Meat Boy had very inaccurate
jumping. You just gotta learn to bunny hop and Counter-Strike and everything's so simple.
The thing about Super Meat Boy is, when you get something wrong with Super Meat Boy, you die, and then you instantly respawn. And there's no like huge amount of backtracking because these levels are only so long because they planned for it to only be like a very short experience, like a single map in Super Meat Boy. If you're on key and doing it right, would be a max of about 2 minutes, right? Here you're talking about like a series of jumping puzzles in which the failure state is literally being reset a significant distance. So maybe it takes you about 2 to 4 minutes to do each segment, and there's about, I'd say, five segments throughout the entire thing. And so the entire thing would take about 20 minutes. But each time you fail a segment, even if it's at the very end of it, you go pretty much all the way back to the start of the segment. So
let me just interject and like suggest something.
Yeah.
Maybe you should try stopping shit at video games. That just didn't make any sense, but just stop being shit at video games and learn to jump. Jump around. Come on and jump around.
It was harrowing. I just stopped having fun after a while.
I was listening to you guys playing earlier, and it did not sound like you were having any sort of fun.
But what? It's like
all
the fun
was gone.
Exactly. It's like the kind of fun you have when you're playing like Dark Souls or something like that, where if you don't be careful, you really hate
yourself.
The game. Yeah, you hate yourself. You hate the game. And it becomes an element of just wanting to beat it. Like, you just want someone, like, yourself or anyone else around you, to beat it. And then you feel like you've had some form of like justification for the time.
It's the hate where you get all your favorite food, but you don't eat it. You just sort of cry. Like, you cry surrounded
It's as if it's your favorite food in the world, right? But it's filled with like rusty nails. But you're still eating it because it's your favorite food, but you're hating it at the same time. And it's painful.
I mean, whose favorite food isn't full of rusty nails? Like, I'd like to meet that weirdo.
Oh, there's a cupcake. Oh, my mouth. Oh, but it's such a nice cupcake. It's like that. Like, that's what it was like. And again, this is when Yak's Band owned the entire thing. So to run through it, what it is, again, you have about 4 to 5 segments of 4 minute long platforming sections, right? And what that boils down to is not only is the area supposed to be contested, so more than one team will be there. We did this in the perfect conditions, so only our team was there, right? More than one team would be there at any given time, so that you'd be fighting along the whole way. And each segment has a set of traps, and you have to platform to the traps, like the trap activation keys. But once you get there, you can essentially just spam things like boulders or like logs that fall on your enemy or like spike traps or shit like that to make those 4 minute segments, which are already taking me like 10 to 20 minutes to complete to get to the next one, even longer because you're actively getting other people's way.
It's funny, huh?
I will say, you guys, you know, complaining about how terrible it was and comparing it to, you know, Cereal with Nails in it. I think you guys are just jealous because Axe and I were the first ones to get there.
And, I mean, I am so jealous.
I'm just saying.
I was so jealous. Well, what do you feel about it, Duren? How do you like it?
It was, I mean, the comparisons to Dark Souls, I think, are somewhat accurate because it is one of those things that, like, it's you're hating yourself the whole time you're doing it, but once we kind of got to that end and we saw the chest, like, that was better than any raid boss I've ever been a part of. Just this massive chest on this big platform and knowing that we were the first two to get there.
Yeah, pretty much.
You guys just like feeling pain. You're masochists.
Well, okay.
Well, no. To be fair, and I don't know if I don't recall if you mentioned this or not because I was only halfway paying attention, but as you're going along, there are traps that you can set to hinder the progress of other people. And that isn't just the progress of people of other factions, but also the people of your same server as well. So it was a blast being able to be one of the first people up there and then just fuck with everybody as they were trying to make their way up.
So it's like Dark Souls, then, where you'll leave a message saying,
absolutely.
A giant dragon just appears.
And so, like, for instance, one of the very last rooms, it was a circular room that you would have to climb these ledges as you went along. And once you got to the top, there were some chains that you could pull that would open the gates on the floor level and let out, like, three mobs, one of which was a veteran. All of them, I believe, were level 82.
Yeah, the highest level game being 80.
And that when we got there, there were two other people from another guild that were about two platforms up, and they just froze. Because they knew that if they missed that jump, they were going to fucking die. And that was just the best feeling in the world.
The way you're making it sound, it, like, stumbled upon numerous consecutive glitches. Like, there's just an easy ramp to the side, and you just happen to be, like, jumping all over badly done environment.
Oh, yeah. It felt like that, because, again, this is MMO, and it doesn't feel like it was designed to feel like a platformer. It felt like it was designed to be ruins, which happened to have ledges that were just about the right side to stand on, and you'd have to navigate them to get to the end. And this is all talking about just the platforming itself. We're not even talking about the room that was pitch black, complete darkness.
So, Duren, tell us what's going on. I'm so confused on the screen.
Oh, right.
Like, people are running around.
Shit is going. It looks like we're heading...
People.
Looks like I think we're heading over to...
Keep the map up for about 30 seconds or for okay. Sure. It'd take a while to come up.
Oh, now he's going
to
die. Yeah. Second
stream.
No, it looks like I think we're heading over to this to earn the skill point.
Oh, the map looks really nice. I love the look of this map.
Yeah, the map's actually... Yeah, it's kind of nice.
So what you can see there is they've taken a supply camp in the top right there. And so red has pretty much this entire map. Blue has a supply camp to the... northeast, northwest of their current position. I'm not sure if that's the direction they're going to be heading.
Does the other team even have players?
At some point, we felt that we were almost going to take the central keep. Like, it was a pitch battle there for a couple of minutes. But
they're all off jumping up a tower.
Exactly.
Guys, I didn't realize different areas in the World v World had, like, different tile sets, because all that I played of World v World was on the Eternal Battlegrounds, and it was just, you know, rolling green plains, and that
yeah,
was it.
Exactly.
So it's the first I've seen of any other environment.
Seems like the ones on the outside all have this tile set, and the one in the middle is different. It looks like that. I think that's for balance reasons. You don't want one server to have a more difficult to capture area than the others. And the central is going to be shared, so obviously it's less of an issue to be balanced. But so what they're doing now is essentially he's rolling Link, the tag LINC, that's our guild, and everyone else here is just like guys we're rolling with, and these guys are just going to be having fun. You notice in the top left of the screen levels, for those, this is a good time now that we've talked about that jumping puzzle, and I'll leave the black room statement, the pitch darkness room statement to later, just in case we go back there. At worst, I'll complain about it at the end of the show. Let's just say that. But just to explain World vs. World, what you're looking at here is it's a giant PvP / PvE area where multiple teams of about 500 people representing each server involved. Oh god, someone else take over.
Oh, it's the Batmobile. We need the Batman. Or no, that's not the Batman. Where's that from? Like a you know what? Forget it. I'm sorry.
So I think of the World v. World chat. World v. World, basically, as Sinister saying is...
Correctly said, is three worlds.
World versus World versus World, three of them, because there are three factions each. The mad dash around stealing keeps from other factions and murdering other real players whilst also doing environment PvE stuff to, you know, gain buffs and stuff and whatnot.
Oh, so you look at that now that I've like magically appeared back in the chat.
Oh look, you're back.
Hey,
did you defeat the Joker?
Oh god, yeah. Whenever I get a phone call on this line, it is the worst experience ever. Because not only if it's on the other line does my neck go down for some reason, don't ask me why, but if it's on this line, then I quickly have to mute and whatever I'm saying goes to shit. Anyway, so as he pointed out, yes, there are three servers. Yes, everyone's doing a pitch battle, and yes, it's a keep based system. And agreed, there are PvE areas involved. And so what ended up happening is groups of players like this one go around the entire map. And depending on who's leading them, because there is leadership systems in place, so all you can see here is there's green names on the screen, and those are guys we're just rolling with. But blue names, like those above, for example, AX on the right there, right next to Durin, are guys in the same team. So there's multiple levels of team structure in this. There's squads, which is the highest one, which is led by a commander. The commander actually needs a significant amount of gold investment to... In order to be a commander, you have to buy this book, and that costs gold, and none of us have gold because we're all poor bastards. So you won't see any commanders
well,
here.
You guys are. I don't know about other people.
How much gold
like
do you
me.
Have, Noob? How much gold do you have?
Uno gold pieces.
One.
Uno.
One gold one. Piece. Okay.
Spanish for one.
It costs like, what, 20 gold to be a commander? And we saw like there's one commander 10. Today. I suspect it was a developer or something, but he didn't seem like he knew what he was doing. Anyway,
like some of the arena developers, like I would say, don't really know what they're doing.
So there's multiple levels of team structures. There's team, then squad. So squads are usually directed by commander, and what that means is you generally have really large scale battles where these people are directing large forces towards not only areas within one keep, and if you saw what they were back in a second, that's just a supply camp. Keeps are bigger than that, and central castles are even bigger still. You might even see them coming up on a tower soon. But
that bear is angry about you attacking that village. He is not happy.
Yeah.
He is not happy.
That's an angry ass bear. What's it called?
Frostgate
bear. Beast. Kick ass. Again, I don't know why you guys. Anyway, I'm doing
no damage to it.
Exactly. I play this form of PvP very differently to what most people do.
It's taking about 8 guys to take him down.
My response is you shouldn't be attacking that bear. You should be moving on. But anyway.
It's a serious bear.
Again, like you have really large pitch battles, hopefully with everyone being relatively coordinated. And we did have moments today where the other team, opposing team, were coordinated. And we did have a moment today, again, when we had that single commander where our team was coordinated. But after a while, it just boils down to Zerg, which is, I think Noob asked this before, a Zerg in this context is a large group of people without any direction that's just like beating itself against defenses to slowly wear them down.
See, but the problem with what you're saying is Zerg is a noun. It's Zerg Rush would be a verb.
Oh, yeah, right? But I guess, sure.
Zerg would be a shorthand for a Zerg Rush.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Zerg is what we've called it for quite a while now. And it's not just me.
Catch up with the times.
As a Korean person, I'm deeply offended by your improper use of terminology relating to StarCraft.
But my problem
with the Korean card.
Like, my problem with this massive... PvP thing is, yeah, it's great now when everyone's organized, but is it eventually going to be who is just less shit? Like, instead of who is really good.
No, like, because the way the system ends up working out eventually, and this is something we probably won't see until the launch of the game, but the way it's essentially going to kind of work out is something kind of along the lines of, like, rated battlegrounds in World of Warcraft, for anyone who's played that. So basically what they do is, like, this will be, you know, our server versus two other servers. This lasts for, you know, a certain number of time, or a certain amount of time, and then at the end of that time, there's deemed a winner of the battleground. And at that point, that winner then will, for the next next go-around, will be placed against other servers who also won theirs. So the idea being that you will always be playing against people who hopefully seem to be roughly about your skill level.
Yeah.
Or at least your population level.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd just like to say welcome to ArenaNet for, like, pulling this off in a beta weekend. Like, that's some crazy stuff going on.
And look
right
at
now.
This. Like, suddenly shit got real.
Yeah.
That is the opposing team.
You're just going to see that bear absolutely tanking it through the middle of the screen at the moment.
People already going down. This is going to go really poorly for us.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. This is... We made better
there
decisions.
There he is! I told you! The
bear. Fucking bear.
I think it's a bear.
I think that bear should have his own game.
Well, can't you call in, like, AC1... Actually, no, I'm thinking of the wrong game. Sorry. What can you do here?
Yeah, these are the staging what I like to call a tactical withdrawal.
This doesn't seem very tactical. This seems just like they're about to get wiped out.
And they're just running the hell away.
Right. And they're running... They should be really running away, but they're...
Oh, they're running towards our keep. You can see it on their map in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen. That's the mini-map. It's been changed for this beta. I like the new design.
You guys bring shame to our guild. This is awful. What is this? Fight! Kill them all! What is this? Stop running! Hold the line!
They can't hear us, noob. Unless for some reason they're tuned into both, they can't hear us. But anyway.
I don't like the mini-map.
Really?
I
think the shape's weird. Like, I'm used to a circular mini-map. That's just simple as that.
Is it erect?
Yeah.
Yeah, why is it erect? Like, that doesn't show enough of...
Well,
this
you can actually resize it. So, yeah. Like, you'll see me do that in just a moment.
Yeah,
square then. Sort it out.
Why is it a rectangle in the first place?
A mini map. I mean, you have a battle going on here.
If we're gonna watch you play, we're gonna watch you play the way I want you to.
This is why everyone's losing, because they're all resizing their mini maps at the exact same time.
No, they're losing because they didn't have a square mini map.
Exactly. There you go.
Exactly,
you don't have the right tactical information. You know? Haven't you played Ghost
backwards and they're running away when they should be coming in.
And, do you know who's got a square mini map? The bear. The bear is survived.
Because that bear is just like one thing, that's the only reason it's surviving. If that bear was a pet, it should be already dead, to be honest.
One of them was a pet. That alligator is definitely a pet. This yak,
bad.
Though.
Look, it's all good. Yeah, bear's pretty.
That went real bad.
Oh, he's going down. You should shadow pull. You should shadow.
Get a nice shot on the
really
bear.
Shadow pull him. Oh, he's down.
Now they're committing.
Shaking my head, man. Anyone who knows Necromancer is shaking their head, Durin. But it's hard to talk. It's very hard to talk and stream at the same time, I have to say. Don't waypoint. Don't waypoint. Anyway.
Don't waypoint.
That's pretty much it. It's essentially that we've established
Skill Wars.
That's Skill Wars. We're wrapping up today. Yeah, thanks for joining us. So what you see is eventually Durin will res and then get back to the team, and you can see some action, further action on screen here. We'll probably pull away from the topics if we see something interesting like what just happened. But to move back on and to let you on, to distract people from this sad, defeated screen, we're going to move on to our first topics this week. And by that I mean we're just going to be running a normal Linkin Cast to some extent, aside from what you see on screen. So the first topic this week, in case everyone has the show notes open, know what the fuck's going to happen, is...
There's a Guild Wars 2 beta weekend.
Shit, really?
I'm just going to take a swig of this, whatever this is.
soap water dish.
Oh, God. Anyway, so yes, there's a beta this week that I guess is news. We discussed it last week. And if you're wondering about the changes between last beta and this one, we actually covered it over the last 2 weeks rather spectacularly.
They took a shit in this beta. They shit up my utilities. Fuck you. fuck you.
Okay, yeah, we might go back into that later in the show, because we have had a little bit more of a chance to see the new trait system and the utility system. We'll probably get back to that. I'll add it to the list. But first, the servers were doubled this week. That's the first piece of news. We missed it last week because it came out on Monday that they announced this, I believe it was. But yeah, the servers have doubled. Any thoughts, Noob? What do you say to that?
So there's been not just doubling servers, but they've specifically like put servers under German or French names.
Oh, cool.
Why did they do that? I'm not quite sure of the reasoning behind that.
European servers, man. I mean, players, man. They got a bunch of people.
No, but there's already European servers. But within European servers, they have German and French servers.
There's plenty of people who play in Germany.
If you think about it, when you have the American servers, you know everyone's going to be speaking English. So I guess it's a way to...
It's because nobody wants to play with the French.
Same language-speaking people together.
Yeah, we want to cordon the French off. I get the problem. We have French people.
Exactly.
Are you guys getting ripped by a bear? Another one? Or a mowbird? Anyway, so that's the thing. Also, I love the idea that, like, especially coming off from my long D3 hiatus. Sorry, no. My D3...
I was going to say, that would be...
Pool of tears? Yeah, I guess you call it a pool of tears, or just like a swamp of tears. It was a case of me playing D3 for quite a while, then finally getting sick of it, but... coming from how they handle server issues over there, of just having constant server shutdowns and...
they didn't handle server issues, basically.
Exactly, pretty much. It was pretty bad, after all. Now that I look back on it, past the rose-tinted glasses, because I really do like D3 as a game, but until you get to endgame, anyway. But the way the ArenaNet handles servers, it's like, this is a really fantastic look into how they'll do it in the future. Like, seriously, they had some server issues, some minor server issues. A lot of people like had a pretty good experience last beta, and this beta they're like, hey, we're doubling servers, whatever. Hey guys, we got you covered. It's fantastic. I love the fact that they did that for us. And it has good signs for the future. But this is old news. Let's move on, because seriously, we didn't come on here to talk about a lot. News that's pretty much already outmoded by the fact that the Beta Awakens already started and people are already having fun in the game. So let's move on. Another thing, just to make sure we touch upon it, because we did miss it last week, and pretty much the only thing we missed of importance from the changes between betas was the Mystic Forge. An item called the Mystic Forge has been added to Lion's Arch, I believe it was. And what it is essentially you put in 4 items from any kind of item, and the generally like drops you found that are particularly bad, or something like that, like junk items, really. So you give it 4 items. It's essentially a genie, so it takes those 4 items and it puts them together and pumps out a new item. I'm not sure how it does it. It might have something to do with item, like internal item levels, and then some form of algorithm judging how good the item comes out.
Yeah. So if you put a bunch of magic items, you're going to get a better magic item, probably. I believe. I believe that
it's still random, so maybe you won't. Yeah. But chances are you.
No. You will get a magic item. They've said that. They've confirmed if you put in all like specific magic items.
Cool.
Then, like, and they've also said there's like actual recipes for specific items.
Oh, awesome! So, I didn't know that. I thought it was just random.
Right, and they're gonna use that to constantly update, you know, new recipes as the game continues to exist.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so again, like, I think it wasn't us, but Tarkin, who's been on the show before, what happened was he got like four random items he got just from exploring the world, chucked them to the Mystic Forge, and he came out with actually a magical rifle, and he was a guardian, so it wasn't particularly useful for him, but it was quite a good rifle, so he ended up selling that on the auction house, not the auction house, the trading post, for quite a bit of silver.
Jesus Christ.
I know, I'm sorry.
Did he say how much?
He's selling it, he's planning to sell it for 8 to 10, probably, which is not bad. Hey, man, hey, he's only like level 11. It's not bad. Not bad.
I dropped that much silver for the centaurs to pick up.
God damn it. I hate you.
I don't even like carrying, you know, if I don't, let's say I have like 49 silver, I don't like the 9, so I'll just drop 9 silver. That's how rich I am. Yeah.
And did you get a chance to play with a Mystic Forge noob?
No, I am not.
We pretty much just played WBW all day, and it was great for the parts we played WBW. I have different opinions of that mini dungeon, but so that's essentially
the Mystic Forge seems like an interesting concept. It's like when you play like any MMO, it's sort of like why does junk even exist? Like what is the point of junk items? Like I suppose it's so you can collect it and sell it for a bit of.
Well, I think the actual answer is I believe what the D3 guys, how Blizzard handles it, is it's about loot tables. So essentially, you need a lot of junk, and in their case, greys as well. So like real junk to fill out the loot tables. So essentially, how that shit's calculated on their end. It rarefies what they want to rarefy, and
right.
So, yeah. The problem with that
it's just cool that you, is yeah. Like we, the problem is to us, it's nothing. Like
yeah,
that,
exactly.
That's,
why not just give us gold or whatever? And what they've done in this
give
weekend,
me gold, please.
And it wasn't in the patch notes is the fact that that kind of issue has been solved by the fact that junk items now get lumped together, and you actually have a sell all junk button now in the merchant.
That's really useful.
Yeah. Did anyone play any PvE? Like, Noob, did you get a chance to see that? Because we had guys from the guild.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the couple times I've used that, it often only removed like one or two items. It doesn't remove any soulbound or some soulbound items, like quest-related items it won't touch, etc. Like, the stuff you wouldn't expect to touch. It doesn't touch any weapons or armor, no matter how bad it is. It's just right. Stuff you can never use, assuming.
And I'm just pausing here because the guys on the stream have run into a problem because they've literally taken pretty much the entire map now. And the time it takes them to move to the next area to attack is the time it takes to take that area by someone else in the active den. So we're literally having... Oh, awesome. They're going to head to a skill point challenge. Sweet.
We'll see that later.
That should be interesting.
Yeah, it should be cool.
That should be interesting.
So keep tuned in, man. Watch the stream. It could be interesting. And at the moment...
Please watch the stream! Please! Don't leave!
I do want to go ahead and mention again for anybody who's watching...
I'll add you on Facebook. I'll come by your house and we'll have like a sleepover.
I want to mention again now that we're actually streaming, for anybody who's watching, like if you are... like if you have a question about anything, like post it in chat and we'll absolutely answer it as best as we can. But in order to do so, make sure you do have a Twitch account and that you're signed in so that you can participate on chat.
I will answer any question, no matter how personal, if it gets us more viewers.
That's not a question, but it's something.
Oh, man.
Don't tell your friends. Benstead, ask me anything. I will answer anything.
Put it on Facebook.
I'm taking webcam requests if that's what's necessary.
Oh god.
Oh, you bastard. You won up in me.
Thanks to Guild Wars. We've got something more important to stream.
I'll make you a video and then I'll post process it in 3D so you can have me in.
Anyway, so the Mystic Forge. Anyone else have anything else to say? Durin, what are your thoughts on the Mystic Forge?
I haven't even looked at it.
Cool.
I literally logged in and went straight to World v. World, so this is all I've seen of this beta weekend so far.
I kind of hope it's all random, because if it is like recipe based, then it loses the point of being called Mystic. It might as well just be called a forge.
No, but like, I love the fact that there are
random. Sometimes they're specific.
Yeah, I love the fact that most of it's random.
Right, okay.
But there's some like secret combinations that if you put in there, you might get something fucking awesome. I love that idea at least. But again, it is a potluck kind of thing. Like, Tarkin was a. I'm dying today, man. I'm dying. I'm so tired.
Oh, I can see under her skirt. Do that more.
Tarkin was a.
You must have missed the swimming scene.
Guardian, and he got a rifle, so you might not always get something you need, but you usually get something you can at least sell for some silver.
Do you think they might ever do it where you receive gems for their like microtransaction store?
Maybe? I don't think so. Like, honestly, if you want my actual answer, probably not. Like, they do want to monetize Guild Wars because it is a buy-to-play game, so after you buy it, they don't really have
it. Yeah, see, I don't mean like you're going to get fucking 10,000 gems and then you go, you're done. I mean, like, you're going to get the odd 50 or something. So it's like, you know, say you've got 50 lying around. It's like it's the Xbox Live points thing. It's like you've got 80. So say you get 50 and you're like, oh, I really want some aviator glasses, I guess.
There are 100, so maybe I'll pitch in 50.
I'll
goes back downhill from there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a brilliant idea. You should totally be hired by Inet. Well, you shouldn't, actually.
Find the guy who did those utility changes so I can fucking murder him.
We'll get there.
So I guess since we're at kind of a lull in the Worldview world, if there's anything anyone wants to look at in particular in terms of maybe some of those changes or just, you know, mechanic stuff, like, now would be a real good time to do it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I want to go on a long rant about those fucking utility changes.
Oh, we will. So this is, by the way, like, one of the areas in World vs. World. And as I said, it's not only a PvP area, it has PvE elements. Not only that dungeon from before, even though I personally wouldn't particularly recommend this.
Skill challenge.
Yeah, but the NPCs to talk to.
Oh, my God.
This is the skill challenge.
What a challenge.
Right. Yeah.
Really,
I've already done it, so I'm just standing here. But basically, yeah, all you do, you go up, you hit this button, you commune, and that's it. That's your skill challenge.
Yeah. That is your
skill challenge.
This stuff's really cool. Like, when you, I guess the only comparison is like Wintergrass for World of Warcraft. And
guys, I can outrun a centaur.
I guess it was like the raid after it, but like this massive thing with like challenges and stuff in it. It's a really cool idea. I like it.
Yeah, definitely. It's just that some of these skill challenges. Well, the idea, I think, on Anet's part is because some people want to go from level 5 to level 80 only in World vs. World, so just through PvP. They put in the skill challenges because you do need skill points on your way along. You do want skill points, so obviously if you have these skill challenges, you get C points easier, and they didn't want them to make it particularly difficult to do skill point challenge because you're already in a PvP area and you're already doing difficult stuff all day. So they just made it a really simple thing where you walk up and use it and you get your skill point. But in my opinion, that's a cop-out.
Oh, is it raining?
It's a complete car.
Yeah, it's raining.
Oh, cool. Hey, weather effects. It's confirmed, I guess.
That's right. I forgot that they added that in this
Yeah, I totally forgot. Like, we've seen day to night cycles, and I think the cycle's around 90 minutes. But I forgot that it's totally...
I saw snow at one point, so...
Yeah, I did as well. Somehow I completely forgot that it wasn't already there.
Yeah.
It seems so natural. Yeah, exactly.
And I think this is absolutely a beautiful game, by the way. Like, anything, now that they've made some performance enhancements, they've been able to bump it up a couple of degrees in terms of graphics. Like, I've just been continually floored by the look of this game. I mean, if you're watching the stream, you know what I'm talking about. I think
how
at
does
least...
it compare to Guild Wars 1, like, style-wise? Does it look similar?
Guild Wars 1 tended to go...
stylistically similar, but it's like a huge graphical improvement.
Not only that, it's because of the new engine, they've been able to do more stuff with that style. So Guild Wars 1 kind of, if you want to break it down, Guild Wars 1 hints to what they did with Guild Wars 2. Like, you see some areas which...
It's a heavily modified engine of the original Guild Wars engine.
I'm pretty sure they built it up from scratch, man. Because they had to change everything because of areas like this with 250 people on screen at the same time. Remember, the Guild Wars 1 was 8 people at a time. I'm pretty sure, like, their engine...
Heavily instanced.
Like, literally, you don't have areas like this. Suck it.
It's Guild Wars Engine heavily modified.
Really? Owned?
Yes.
I just got owned, but there you go, heavily modified.
You owe me $80. You can buy me a copy of Single Cross Game.
Well, there you go. I just got pwned. I just got pwned live. There you go.
Yeah. Live.
Either way, I think the game looks beautiful. I didn't even know it was a heavy modified.
I'm going to keep running this game on medium. The characters have been dodgy. When the game comes out for realsies, I just want to be blown away.
So and for those medium. Watching, just in case... I don't think we said this before, but this is all running on, I think, one step above medium.
No, this is actually right on medium.
This is on medium,
oh,
exactly.
Wow,
it looks this good on medium.
It looks good on medium. Yeah. It does look good on medium.
Yeah, and it looks significantly better, especially in terms of textures for the higher up settings and lighting and shadows as well. And I'm on a GDX 260, and I can run it at pretty much max settings, depending on what resolution it depends on.
I can almost run it at lowest settings. It's really good. How this game runs on my computer.
Oh,
it's a good-looking login screen.
Yeah. For some reason, like, my infinitely slower 1.6 gigahertz quad-core with, like, a 8-year-old card laptop runs it better than my desktop.
Yeah.
Really,
well, I was reading on, like, the changelog, they were like, oh, if your CPU's overclocked, you might want to factory reset it, because it works
totally
pretty well.
That's totally not the case, though. Like, Durian, before we started for streaming today, bumped his CPU from 2.6 GHz up to 3 GHz, and it totally...
Whoa! Magician!
There's, like, barely any difference, and it totally ran smoother after he did so. For me, I've always run smooth, and mine CPU's overclocked from 2.6 to 3.4. So it's absolutely...
Mommy says overclocking is bad. It'll kill your CPU forever.
Only if you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, definitely. You do. Yeah, you should look up stuff before you...
If you don't know what you're doing and you're not using a proper program for it.
Hey, Dave, you just increase the multiplier.
Just triple like, the voltage and like don't yeah, quadruple the multiplier.
Do not listen to any of these people.
You just pour water on it and it'll cool itself down. Just pour water on it when it gets too hot.
Yeah. Just get like a nice lolly and just rub it on the top.
No, I learned on the internet. You just buy a large fish tank, fill it full of mineral water, throw your computer in there, and you're pretty much golden. I mean, you can go up to 5 then.
Yeah, easy. There you go.
Make sure you run magnets on your hard drive as well, because that boosts the speed.
This is a beautiful area. I didn't even know this was
Don't do any of this.
This is still World vs. Wolf, right?
Yeah, this is still World vs. Wolf. I'm not sure exactly what we're doing, but we're doing an event right now.
Oh, cool. And he's wiping out the crate area. I think you're protecting them from wherever they are.
Yeah, it looks like we're...
I think...
We have the highest friendship level. What this bit isn't
showing is how busy the Guild Wars can get.
Oh, yeah.
We talk about friendship level.
The friendship level, I think, is in reference to the NPCs over there. Like, if you help them out a bunch. And I think friendship level is just like a swinging meter. So if a different team helps them out more, then these dudes just like flip a switch.
Apparently, the other servers just aren't playing.
Is that the girlfriend
it's
he
not,
had? You didn't
a
know she was slut
meter,
until
it's just three separate meters. The first one's an owl wins.
So, again, more PvE elements in World vs. World, which is a great thing because these guys were totally bored because they pretty much wiped out the enemy team. And it still gives them something to do. So I think it's pretty cool. And again, how World vs. World works is you bring in your PvE character into PvP. So these guys are getting levels. They get XP. Yeah, exactly. They're getting your skill point. They're getting levels, getting XP. They're also having some time that they're blowing off time. And it seems relatively fun, not quite as fun as actually taking keeps, but it's still something rather than nothing. So I guess we'll
spend time and
appreciate the art of PvE.
And I have to say this does
you're
look
such cute. A simplistic savage that you don't understand fighting non-humans.
Yeah, I just give me a sword and give me something to whack with it, and I'm happy. To be honest, or a rifle in this case, a rifle and something to shoot. But so this will be a good time to move on to our next first topic, our first real topic of the week. This is from the AMA, so that's an Ask Me Anything that they ran on Reddit, which had the about 5 to 6 Guild Wars 2 developers. It's about, say I think it was like 50 to 80 pages long. I've distilled it down to about 8 to 12 topics to talk about, of which 3 are really interesting, the rest we might touch on if we have nothing else to talk about, and we're running short on time. We are ahead of time. But... you can find it on Reddit, you can find it on links in the Giant Bomb forums. If you want to read it, it's all there. But these are just what I picked out as the messages to talk about. So the first one on the list is, Nubarama, do you want to read it out? Can you see it? Do you have the show notes open?
Yes, I do have it open.
Cool. Read it.
So, the AMA, source, Mike O'Brien, president/founder. No, it's almost certainly... Wait, what am I reading?
On a response to a question that someone asked as to whether Guild Wars 2 would be on Steam. And the only thing I put in here is the quote of what Mike O'Brien said at Nubarama.
No, it almost won't certainly be on Steam. Valve has some business terms that will keep most new MMOs off Steam. Keep in mind that the Guild Wars 2 client is free to download from our website and has no copy protection. And if it's really important, you can add non-Steam games to your Steam library, which I've done.
So just to put this in perspective, Mike O'Brien, president/founder, he knows what he's talking about. Like he's not a guy, like a random developer who said, oh no, I don't think it's going to be on Steam. He's literally pretty much one of the top brass of the company. And this is them confirming pretty much that they will not be going onto Steam with Guild Wars 2. So for those of you out there waiting on a Steam release for Guild Wars 2, it's not going to happen. At least in the future.
I don't see why they would really need to put it on Steam.
So for the person here who hasn't really been indoctrinated as much as the rest of us, Ramen, what do you think of the whole Steam situation? Would you like to see it on Steam? What do you think of their responses, Matt?
I think it's always nice to be on Steam. I mean, I think there are genuinely some people who like to have a centralized library of all their games.
Yeah.
And like have it on Steam and stuff.
You know what other country was really centralized? The Soviet Union.
Oh, God damn it.
Guess what happened to them?
Well, okay, we'll take a lesson from the Soviet Union, but I kind of don't understand why you wouldn't put it on Steam. I mean, it didn't...
I'm guessing it has something to do with the way they do the updating
because
or something.
Because the business terms... The only thing I can think of is microtransactions. But every free-to-play MMO on Steam has microtransactions.
But the thing
it
is that...
Be that.
Free-to-play MMOs probably wouldn't have much to lose, and the other MMOs that aren't free-to-play have subscription fees that they're relying on as their primary source of income. Since Guild Wars 2 doesn't have subscription fees, they would want literally 100% of the profit, or as much as they can get.
That's the only other reason I can think of, but then it's like, why sell it? Why sell it through any other retailer?
Like, the whole thing here with Valve has some business terms that keep most MMOs off Steam. And he pretty much means, and he goes on to say that it's a free client. It sounds like when they discuss it with Steam, because everyone knows that Steam does take a cut of pretty much whatever you put on the server. And
right,
obviously,
they're a business.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever MMOs are currently working off Steam, then they clearly have business models which support that and are able to go on with that.
Are there anything? MMOs on Steam?
I don't know.
Like,
I don't think there are. Like, are there any free-to-play
ones?
Eve
is on Steam. Eve is on Steam.
Right, there you go. There's one.
Oh, yeah,
Eve is on Steam.
I don't know whether you can get a subscription through Steam.
Lord of the Rings Online actually
just
hit Steam this week.
For a month.
Yeah. But, I mean,
you don't buy the
subscriptions
in games, you buy the subscriptions in-game.
Yeah. And so, what that means is, essentially, not only is... the Guild Wars 2 devs, and this is a case for other people like EA as well, not only do they want to update without having to go through some form of Steam certifications for major updates, maybe, for example, their expansions. They don't want to be charged for putting it on Steam, that kind of stuff. But obviously, they could end up having it temporarily off Steam, maybe for the first year or so, then putting it on Steam later, maybe. But
I can really see that happening. Because,
yeah, which is, again, what Lord of the Rings thing
is. Yeah, a game like Guild Wars 2, when you do need as much money coming from the like client side, is, you know, after a year, all your hardcore people who are like, yeah, I'm definitely going to play it, but you whack it on Steam, first week, 25% or 50% off, and you know, you've got like even 1,000 or 2,000 more people who are like, oh, okay, I'll buy it, I'll try it, and you get a nice boost, which is the way Steam sales work, right, in terms of everyone who wouldn't buy it, it's like, I'll see that game for $1, I'll buy it.
And honestly, like, anybody who wants to have their Guild Wars 2 on Steam, unlike anything that runs through Origin, you can actually run Guild Wars 2 through Steam and still get the Steam overlay. So I mean,
right.
You'll see that, and we pull that up here in just a second, but, I mean, it all works the same as a game on Steam would. The only thing that doesn't really track is the hours you spend, which I'd rather not see anyway in an MMO.
Yeah, and he just pulled.
I think it is purely because for the first year or the first year and a half, they need to, because this is a massive game. This is a massive undertaking.
Exactly.
That's what they did.
And they need all the money from their revenue. Yeah, they can't afford to give 30% cut to Valve, even if it's.
And I'm sure Valve doesn't want to hand out that many, like a 30 gigabyte MMO, to millions of people on launch day. That's probably expensive.
The fact that they'd be paid for it either way, I don't think Valve really cares.
Do you think it's just a flatline price for every game in terms of bandwidth costs? I feel like some games would cost more.
I don't think it even uses Valve's servers, does it? It's BitTorrent, isn't it? It doesn't Valve usually distribute via an equivalent of BitTorrent system?
That I don't know.
I was almost certain.
They have it on their servers.
I almost certainly was a distributed service.
I don't think that's the problem because.
But I agree. The main point is Valve wants a cut, which is fair, obviously, and the internet doesn't see itself being able to give them that cut for at least the foreseeable future. And again, as Raman said, you're generally looking at a case where it does affect people who want that centralized library. As Mike O'Brien says in this AMA, you can add it to your Steam library, but it doesn't look like a case where you can actually purchase it through Steam. You're looking at purchasing it through their website or from a retailer, as another big box game would be, like a console game, for example.
Does anyone know any sort of figures on how many pre-sales Guild Wars 2 has already done?
They said they've made millions, or they've sold hundreds of thousands. I think that's what.
Yeah, because it would be questionable whether or not it would be even beneficial to them at this point. They already know they're going to get enough. people buying the game just from word of mouth from the beta events.
Yeah, I feel like Guild Wars is one of those games where people are not going to buy it because it's on Steam. Like, I could see it for some games, but this is not one of those games.
I can see it for EA games, and that's about it. Like, I can't any other game. That's I can see now with the game people going, so I'm not going to buy it because it's not on Steam.
Well,
the only time I can
in
see
terms
that.
Of, like, it wouldn't get as much sales as if it was on Steam.
Honestly, like, being as somebody who typically only buys PC games if they're on Steam, I had no problems with this one buying it digitally through ArenaNet because I knew it wasn't going to be on Steam, and I really fucking wanted the game. So, you know, bite the bullet and do it. It's not Origin.
The only
so.
Time a game's not going to sell if it's not on Steam is if it's an unknown game. Like, Guild Wars 2 is no. It's getting great word of mouth. It's getting word of mouth by purely being something different to what MMOs are now. It's not like an indie game that literally benefits from being the front page of Steam for a couple of days. Like, there's... You don't... It doesn't...
This isn't Call of Duty. This isn't something that...
No,
just
don't.
Sales.
It's not one of those mega... Yeah, mega indie hits like Call of Duty and things like that.
Duran, I see you guys are actually in a bit of a scrap here on the stream. Do you know what you're up to? Do you know where you are at the moment and what's happening?
I honestly don't know exactly where we are, but I know we ran into a large group of the blue.
Yeah,
it's cool. Like, they've renamed them now. They're not just blue, green, and red. Like, they've given us actual like blue is now called Frostgate people.
Yeah, exactly, and it's pretty cool. I like that whole, because the idea is you don't want to put names on there, because for a lot of people, just that simple, like, subliminal, on a subliminal level, seeing enemy names is kind of like a turnoff. It makes it feel more like PvP. This makes it feel more of like as if you're fighting enemy AI, which you're not, like, you're clearly not, but still. What are you, don't message me during the show, Noob, this is so weird. If you want, you can post it. Noob,
what?
You. Anyway, I'm really sorry for that.
God, just derailing everything.
Yeah, like, so what happens here is, essentially, you can see on the minimap in the right bottom right-hand corner of the screen, they previously we had owned pretty much their entire map, the red map, the green map. So we are red, obviously, we're seeing their names as green, because red is on the screen because they're enemies. Break that all down, let's just break it down. They are attacking one of our currently owned keeps. We're trying to fend them off, and so the Leaky Force guys is going to be in a pretty big engagement here. Like, it's actually, like, if you look at it, there's about, what, 15 enemy aggressors? Maybe about 20 maximum?
Enemy aggressors.
Exactly. And so even with that, this is like a very small engagement in World vs. Worlds. In my opinion, but this
Wait,
I see
are these
this.
Not enemy players? Because it just says Frostgate invaders.
These are players. That's the name.
That's totally what I just totally what I just went into. They say that because exactly because of that. It makes them feel as if they're AI instead of the fact that they're players, which removes a lot of the barrier to entry to PvP. Like,
well, it removes a lot of the stress that some people have when you're playing against another player.
Yeah, exactly.
So nervous. I'm surrounded by all of these people on the internet. I can't.
Honestly, it actually happens a lot more than you would expect.
Yeah, exactly. And what
God, X Shadow Death kids. X is after me.
Yeah, and even there, like, you can see, like, there's some parts where people are dying and they're leaving, like, yellow glowy things. People drop loot now, so they have the full thing.
Do you lose your own items?
No, you don't lose your own items.
No,
you actually just
basically, like, players have, like, a loot base or loot table, same as any mob would.
Yeah, exactly. So you're gaining loot like PVE. It's a lot of interesting ways to make
Do
it feel
drop
as if it's a PVE kind of system. No, they don't. I doubt they drop high level.
I'm surprised you guys came out of that alive. It didn't look good at the beginning.
yeah, that's
like,
that's what really cool thing about PVE.
You
it can be really hard to tell
how you've been fighting.
It can be,
like,
really hard to tell, like, what way a fight's gonna go.
Exactly. Well, the beauty about Guild Wars 2 is not only were they near one of our own keeps, so I think we got some supporting fire from the keep walls, but beyond that, like, it is a skill game. Like, these Leaky Forces, even though I don't really want to toot our own horns too much, Leaky Forces are not bad at the game, from what I've seen, from rolling with them for about a couple of hours.
There's
today.
Ross running away. We see the Fat Man right there.
Running the fuck away.
Leaving you dead. aside from the fact that they don't like to res for some reason.
Yeah.
Jesus. I mean, but yeah. Just... So Leaky Force seemed pretty good. It is a skill-based game. and it's effectively pretty much just wiped there. It tends to be a case of a small group of people can take on a large encampment or a large group of enemies if you have the right, like for example, materials with you. So in a lot of cases, I'm not sure if it's working yet because we had to have some problems, maybe just looking at not looking at the right UI stuff. After I just said we were good at the game, huh? But throwing down a non-mobile siege platforms, so for example arrow carts and stuff on the middle of the field, that has been bugging out for us, or appearing to be bugging out for us a couple of times. Aside from that, if you place down the right artillery, you have a good idea of how to play the game, everyone's doing their job properly, then a small group of people in World Versus World can take on a large group of people. And you can see that there, yeah, exactly. They've just taken on people from near that keep, which is used to be owned by us and is now held by us, we continue to hold it. And now they're heading towards, I believe, a supply camp, which the enemy took back from behind us, and are going to take that back. So it's going to be a pretty interesting view here as long as he gets off the map screen. Because he's dead, he has to walk back to the start and walk back down to where we are. Just for those watching, the system is, once you actually have a keep or equivalent large structure, if you invest enough gold and resources, you can actually erect a waypoint there. Because our guilds and this server tends to focus more on capturing rather than keeping, we tend to lose keeps rather frequently. We do tend to dominate the map because we do have that constant mentality of keeping the enemy down, keeping them resource starved, and like capturing all their points. But we do lose points, so investments like waypoints aren't exactly the most beneficial for us, even though it would save him this now 5-minute trek he's about to go through in order to get back with the team. So, oh god. Yes.
I didn't realize there was a way to put waypoints in.
Oh yeah. So for larger structures, it's a bit of gold, a bit of resource, and
don't jump down there. You're gonna die. Probably.
No, you can totally make it. You can totally make it. No, that's not gonna happen.
So like fall damage is proportional, not like a fixed amount, right?
It seems to be proportional, yes, but it's definitely a height base. Like for example, even though he's got 30,000 health, if he dropped down to that tall part, he would have died. Like straight up.
Yeah, it's proportional.
Exactly. Cool. Proportional to both your current total health level and total height that you're dropping from.
Because he's losing 10,000 health for like.
Yeah, something I would have lost like a couple hundred health with my character, which has only 3,000 health. So yeah, you're right. There's also traits you can take for some reason if you want to. I don't know why you would, that halve fall damage and stuff like that. Maybe it'll make it easier to move around, in World versus World, but honestly, you can probably just play smarter and get around that. Anyway.
It'd be pretty funny if you did dupe a bunch of people to jumping off after you.
Yeah.
Watch them all die.
Exactly. Hey, email that jump. I'll just try it. Oh, no.
Oh, that's gone hard.
I'd be careful down there. That there's some enemies that are... You have to try not to aggro.
I just saw our panties.
Thanks for channeling Rawson there.
I'm like a medium for Rawson's spirit.
There you go. So while he catches up with the group, we can move on to our next topic. So this is another thing that came up about AMA. This time the source is John Peters, so he's the systems designer for Guild Wars 2, what pretty much the lead systems designer, I believe.
I know what John Peters sounds like.
Okay, yeah, do it for us, Noob.
Tournaments are locked per data center, so cross-Atlantic play isn't happening, and there are 8-team elimination.
I can't wait for you to read the next quote.
I can't take
sentence. I just love the awkward silence after that. As everyone just kind of processes what Nu just said.
You're listening to what he said?
To lay that down, so John Peters has confirmed that, so how it worked in the original Guild Wars was when it first came out, things like team arenas, so the equivalent of a match-made PvP, in that case it was 4v4, and this time around it's 5v5, did have a tournament system. So essentially, that was more of a matchmaking system, but this is more of a tournament system. How it works is, in structured PvP, you get into groups of five, so you start a party before you go in, and you can go in as a team and compete in essentially a live, activated, automated tournament system. So that would be 8-team elimination, so obviously 8 with a eventual single winner, and that winner would get, I believe it was some items. I think they've confirmed that you get some items for the victory. Of that tournament, which is kind of cool. But the main thing was, in the original TA, in the first Guild Wars, it started off as server-based, or data center bound. What does that mean? What I meant was you couldn't play as a European at the time, because I'm Australian, so I played on Euro servers. I couldn't play with the Japanese guys. I couldn't play with the Koreans. I couldn't play with the American guys. After a couple of years after release, then they made it international. So eventually they opened up between data centers, and it made tournaments significantly more interesting, because you get to the point where the meta game changes more frequently, because there's just simply more players on the server, and simply more things are match made against other things. But at least at launch, they've confirmed that their eight team elimination automated PvP system is locked to your data center. So that means Americans will only be able to play Americans, Europeans will only be able to play Europeans. There's only two data centers at the moment. What's everyone's thoughts? Chav?
I don't know. Because I obviously didn't play any... I didn't play any structured PvP in Guild Wars 1. So yeah. I was all PvE in that. So my first experiences in PvP are really with Guild Wars 2, and the stuff that I'm interested in is Wealthy Worlds. So I don't really have much input on this.
Right, gotcha. And I guess Edmund, sorry, Nubarama, you wouldn't give crap.
You want to use my game name, not my real name?
Nubarama. Okay.
I feel like this is... Because I don't want to run into Koreans in Guild Wars 2. And,
but they're so good at the game.
Exactly. Why would you want to run into good people when playing PvP?
Like, Team Arenas was the best when you were
pressing. The point of playing PvP isn't to have fun. It's to win. And then... laugh in the face.
Oh, noobs.
I remember when I played PvP at the end of the game and I won, I'd be like, just quit PvP, go back to PvE, why don't you play with heroes, asshole? That's what I've been saying at the very end of PvP games,
right.
And I don't get to say that if I'm playing against good players.
Okay, that's
so I'm fine with this.
I
think it's to do with, like, they don't want to complicate their server issues beyond what they already have to. They're launching a pretty mahoosive game for them. Like, they can't... It's a pretty
big
thing
to have
it international.
Was that word again? Was that mahoosive?
Mahoosive. Basically massive, but I just say mahoosive.
Okay.
Have that a bit more emphasis. But it's like, the fact it took them a couple of years in Guild Wars 1 to get it done, like, everyone would be like, why can't you just do it straight away? It's like, well, it'll probably happen a lot sooner than it did in Guild Wars 1. But at the same time, it's like, it's a whole new breed of game that you've got with Guild Wars 2. So they're just like, they'll take it slow and they'll do it eventually, there's no doubt. But at the moment, you've got to hold tight while they just
get the
actual game working correctly before they start doing crazy shit like that.
Yeah, no, someone would agree. Like, I personally, again, as a person who really loves PvP and who's already... we'll see after this weekend, because I've said that I will pretty much only play structured and world versus world this weekend. So I'll see how I like structured PvP after the weekend. But as a person who really wants that, like, competitive environment and PvP to be really, like, ultra high end, to pretty much only be match made by people who know what they're doing, etc., I love the whole idea of an international PvP environment. But as you're saying, that's a perfectly good point. Like, they're only just doing this game now. They are just setting up their servers. Pretty much this is the first time they've ever actually worked on an MMO themselves. The fact that they've got it working to this extent, like, if you look at this is World versus World, and everything's running bloody smoothly. I haven't seen any hitches so far, aside from him dying a couple times. And so the fact that they've got working to this extent now is fantastic, and I guess I shouldn't be complaining that it may take them a while to make something like structured PvP a little bit more.
It'll be within the first year. I think it'll happen with.
I don't mind if they take it, but now that you've given me a little taste of perspective, I don't mind if they take a little bit longer than the first year. But
would you rather it launch broken, or would you rather it launch,
absolutely,
like,
right?
Properly?
So I'd vastly prefer to.
Well, but if it launches broken, then you have something to complain about.
Well, and honestly, people use that excuse for Diablo 3, and we see how that worked out.
Oh God. Yeah. Jesus.
Diablo 3, that's a whole different argument about how much shit Diablo 3 got away with just because it was made by Blizzard.
And that's not good. It was a good game. It's an amazing game.
That launch was just completely ridiculous and just should never have happened like that.
Yeah.
I've got too many opinions on this. I'm just going to say that the fact that Diablo 3 was phenomenally successful is not good in the long run for the industry. Just my opinion.
Yeah,
I agree, but honestly, that's not the first time. I mean, the same could really be said for Skyrim.
Yeah.
That game was absolute shit when it launched. It got Game of the Year all over the internet.
It's fine, it's a Bethesda game. That's what you expect from a Bethesda game. So it makes
and that's the problem.
That's another thing you've been waiting for. That's not the right answer.
we should expect our games to work when we buy them.
Yeah.
That's what also, that's what I'm testing is for.
I'm talking about the fact that it's always on, like DRM. Like the fact that Blizzard have been justified in doing that is so bad for the industry in the long run. But, like, and also Ubisoft got totally shit on for doing it. And you know, people say, oh, it's just purely single player. It's just purely single player. It's like, well, the only reason Diablo 3 isn't single player is because they wanted to structure it around the real money auction house. Like, there's no reason that game couldn't have had a single player. Despite it, it's just purely because Blizzard wants to run a successful microtransaction store.
To move us on from this topic,
let's
not go into Diablo 3 talk. But on screen, again, it's something pretty cool is happening. What you're seeing here is an example of a very small, again, small engagement.
Oh, you got a gold medal. Congratulations.
Yeah, so they just took a supply camp. They fought against some NPCs. So when you get a supply camp, or when you get anything in War vs. World, you can support it by spending some supply, which is one of the major resources in War vs. World, to elect... Sorry, no. Erect, I guess you'd say, NPCs to defend.
Oh, you said erect.
As if they were tower defense or anything along those lines. The NPCs, in this case, would be like some archers, scouts, stuff like that. You spend some supply to get them going through your area. And that's what they just did. They fought off the enemy NPCs, and they took back a supply gap. And again, that's a very small engagement, even though you saw a lot popping off back there. Again, I'm not sure if we'd actually see a big engagement this time around, because again, this enemy team has really been getting its ass handed to it by Yak's Bend today, and they may have all given up and gone to sleep by now. But we'll see. Hopefully something interesting happens. But so to move on, while he dominates some noobs, I guess they're like picking off.
Why am I being dominated? Fuck you.
We're going to move on to our third topic today, and I guess you can read it out and noob again.
No reaction, really. Not even...
I'm not giving you anything for that. That was terrible.
You got a chuckle out of me.
More than you deserve.
Third topic for the day. Liberama.
Take it away.
So, source John Peters, who is a systems designer. Oh wait, this is the same guy. Now, do the same voice.
I was looking forward to the same voice.
This one is entirely me writing it, so you can do an impression of my voice if you want. I wrote this one. It wasn't a direct quote.
Oh, this should be great.
All right, I'll do it.
Condition property split is in the works. I.e., conditions do different things in PvE and PvP, which hints toward skill property splitting being a thing in the future as well.
Yeah. So what you see there is essentially, I think a lot of MMOs do this, and the Regional Guild Wars one did do this as well, but it hasn't been implemented thus far. So I thought I'd bring an honest piece of news here, especially as someone who does tend to skew towards the PvP side of things, because I like the idea of this, because I hate the fact that some things in PvP get broken or underpowered because they would be overpowered in PvE otherwise. So what they've done is, it was a very slight comment in the AMA, and a lot of people would have missed it. It was about the confusion status, specifically confusion, which is a thing which makes, which is a condition in Guild Wars 2 which makes you damage the next attack skill you use, you do damage yourself instead of the enemy, so like you would see in Pokemon, for example.
What?
Yeah, I know, right? Confusion. Stop. Confusion in Pokemon. So damages yourself. That condition, things that inflict it tend to have really long skill recharges in PvE, and obviously in PvP that would lend itself to never being used, because you don't want just a single status effect to have a long condition, so a long recharge on it. So what someone asked was, will the confusion status be adjusted for PvP, because you'd be using it far more frequently? And John Peters, again, the person who pretty much designs the battle systems and the combat systems over there, and that's why he has the title systems designer, he hinted at the fact that they are planning to split off the confusion status between PvE and PvP, such that in PvP not only do we have the slightly adjusted effects, but I believe the skills will also be slightly rebalanced, such that you have a better usage ratio and a better usage criteria for that skill and that condition. So what this hints at, not only is confusion getting better in PvP, which is a good thing because it's a pretty cool status effect, but it also is looking like other things, because they're doing it for confusion, other things will do the same thing as well. I like this idea from the first skills. What does everyone else think? Noobarama, what do you think about skill PvE, PvP splitting?
Well, they did that in the original Guild Wars, and that's probably a good idea. That way you don't have to balance PvE skills for PvP use. So you're not forcing, you know, your PvE skills to be less effective, so it can be more balanced in PvP or vice versa.
Right.
So, like, the way they did it in the original Guild Wars made sense. So I like this. No, you're not... It's like there's two different spheres. There's the PvP spheres and PvE spheres, and mm-hmm. it's better if you don't muck that up by yep. having some of the same things in there, and you know, it's more differentiated.
Yeah, and I agree. Does anyone else have anything to chime in, Jeff?
So is this talking about this really changing like the base values of say like duration and damage?
Sometimes it's like really that. They rework the skill entirely between PvE and PvP. So if okay. you actually walk through PvP area, suddenly the skill has like half the recharge and does like a slight.
Or it's like in the original Guild Wars, there was a skill called Signet of Spirits. In PvE, it would spawn like three spirits that would do quite a bit of damage, and then in PvP, it would just instant recharge your skills.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so they would sometimes just straight up change what it does entirely.
Yeah, exactly. One to the other. Yeah, it depends.
Okay, it seems like
sometimes it's minor, other times it could be entirely different.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense, because otherwise the PvP scene would be kind of be inhibited by the PvE stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess for people, you know, new to PvP, it might be, you know, a bit off-putting.
Snowstorm. It's beautiful. I'm just watching the stream here. It's raining and snowing at the same time.
Pay attention. Jesus Christ.
Absolutely.
Is that lightning?
Yeah, lightning.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I swear I just saw lightning.
That's fantastic.
Lightning. That's cool. Very frightening.
And the water's choppy. That's cool. Ramen, what are your thoughts on PvP skill splitting?
I can see that, you know, it's a good idea, you know, for all the reasons you stated.
Yeah.
But then it's like, what happens when a PvP ability looks better than the PvE one? Like, when, you know, you make your firebolt do incinerate or whatever, or,
yeah.
you know, it burns or something, and all the PvE
it's usually
like...
No, yeah, it's usually PvE skills that are gimped down in PvP.
No, I don't think in PvP, yeah, exactly. Something usually is more powerful in PvE than
right.
is in PvP.
I don't think I've ever seen a case where PvP skills were actually more powerful than PvE skills.
Yeah, but that's...
Why? I don't mean just PvE, I just mean, like, what happens when the other subset of people are like, well, we're not getting a fair deal, you know, why can't we just keep that ability because it's just better than the one it is at the moment. Like, you get
well,
weird
balance,
issues.
That's
yeah,
like,
usually the argument's balanced. And they do it by because the guys who are complaining because this skill is particularly powerful or not in PvP tend to understand that excuse. So what Enoch generally does is have the PvE version of the skill significantly more powerful than the PvP one. In almost all cases, like obviously the case of confusion might not be. I'm not sure, certain how that finally end up in terms of balance. But in most cases, it's the PvP guys who are like, "Aw, you nerfed it for PvP." Aw, but they don't understand in most cases because
yeah, they're not like waving a flag or anything. what?
Well,
why would they?
Seems like a cool
flags?
Idea.
Yeah. So we'll move on now because we're pulling into our last half hour.
Jordan, show us your inventory. I want to see your inventory.
It'll take a while for the stream to react,
decides
to show us. But we're moving to our last half hour of the show. And we have some questions, not from the chat this time around.
See, Durin is quite wealthy. That's 74 silver. That's quite a bit.
Yeah. And that's an example.
Take off your clothes, Durin. Take off your clothes.
Oh, gosh. So, as a person, as we are doing things a bit differently this week, I do have Ramen here hasn't played too much of Guild Wars 2, and you brought in some questions you wouldn't mind us answering on the show. So, I'd get you to start whittling off your questions. I think you have about five or six. So, let's go through.
Yeah. Okay. First one is like obviously there's a big emphasis on dynamic quests, like the fact that they've sort of got rid of the quest log. You know, it's just as you go along and, you know, it can change according to what you do and what you don't do. And I'm just wondering if eventually, beyond this beta, you just start seeing the similar effects within dynamic quests. It's like, eventually it just becomes whether this fort has been captured, whether generic enemy A, generic enemy B. Like, how do you maintain a quality without starting to slip into a pattern of what these dynamic quests are? Because without the dynamic quest, you know, you do have the ability to sort of get people transforming, you know, in like World of Warcraft, you know, they have people transforming, you have putting on masks, you're doing crazy things. It's like, it's kind of difficult to do that when there's so many variables going on. There's only seem to be a limited amount that you could do with the dynamic quest. I'm just wondering how
kind of an interesting system. I'll let Noob take the first shot because he's the PvE guy, but I do have something to say on the matter. Noob, right, what do you think?
In my opinion, it is getting to that point where there's a lot of stuff, oh, okay, it's taken, I better wait, or let's take that fort back and then we'll do the next one. It is a lot like that, but at the same time, it's not particularly boring. It's not something, it's like, oh god, it's this again, or because a lot of times you're going in there, for me at least, just to have fun in terms of combat and like playing with other people. That's what I've seen most of the time with dynamic quests. It was never really a matter of okay, sometimes it is for XP, like dynamic quests have really a lot of XP and you level up really quickly, and that is that's something I like to do.
Alright, Shav, what are your thoughts on that?
I think, I'm not sure if I said it last time I was on the podcast with you guys, but when it comes to dynamic quests, kind of felt that in their current state, at least for the first beta weekend, they really didn't provide enough of a reward.
Right.
And I just felt like I was getting more from doing the heart quests, you
right.
know, for the heartbender people, because they kind of felt like you were actually getting something from them. I mean, you do get experience and stuff from the dynamic stuff, but otherwise I wasn't really that interested. I was kind of skipping over most of them. Like, oh, there's a dynamic quest, whatever, I'm on the way to the next heart thing, just walking past them. So I'm not sure that's like a natural how they'll be in the final game. I'm expecting, you know, that stuff to get improved on and tweaked, so I'm not giving up on them entirely, but that was my current, you know, state of mind.
Right, so just to get going.
I just realized, like, because I'm too lazy, I'd always rate, like, dynamic quests 5 out of 5, but I really should have rated them properly and given them, like, a legitimate.
That's so sad. But just to make sure, before I give my version of the answer, in your case, Roman, so what do you mean is, are you worried about things getting too repetitive, or are you worried about there being a lack of different objectives? Like, what's your main, like,
well,
question?
I'm worried that the reason they created dynamic quests is because, you know, it's like quests are stale. Like, you know,
right.
it's go kill 10 of these, go kill 10 of those. Mm-hmm. So dynamic quests, change it up. You know, it's like the quest is different each time you do it, or the quest is different, twice the times you do it. And it's just
yeah.
like whether eventually the dynamic quests will just become as stale because...
Okay.
On like your, you know, there can only be a limited amount of like things you can do, and like obviously it's better those initial run through, but then eventually it's like, what's the real benefit than, you know, not having?
Right. So there's a multi-stage answer. I did have an advantage of the other guys because I saw your questions before and I got a chance to think about them a bit more. So my multi-stage answer it boils into a couple of things. The first and foremost is, as you correctly stated, dynamic events tend to be a little bit different every time you do them. But even beyond that, what you're limited by in terms of dynamic quests and quests is air, like landmass. Like you want to have a certain density of quests for a given landmass, right? So in the case of a, like, for example, Guild Wars 1, you go to a specific town and you get maybe 3 or 4 quests from quest givers there, you do them, then you move on to the next town. So the thing with dynamic events in this game is not only do they move around the map, so essentially you have a different amount of quests in different areas, but for a given landmass, not only do you have a specific set of dynamic events that can happen there, but you have the whole thing of dynamic quest lines. And now what I mean by that is a single dynamic event, and you probably already know what I'm talking about here, progresses from the stalemate state, which is the basic state of an event really hasn't really started yet. You walk in and it starts, or like nothing has really progressed one way or another. But for example, like there's one I did recently, which was the Char Shaman. In the basic form, there's a dude in the middle of nowhere, again, that landmass problem. In a different MMO, he'd be there, you talk to him, and you go on the quest to find a Char Shaman and kill it, right? Here, there's a dude in the middle of nowhere, he says, hey, there's a cave over there, Char doing something in there, figure out what it is. So that's one version of the quest, right? But the second part of the line is, if you go to that cave and you find out what they're doing and you defeat them, then it sets to the next step in a trait line. Sorry, not in a trait line, in a quest line. Or a dynamic event chain. So essentially, it moves to the next stage where the Char have realized that you have defeated the people in that cave, so they send reinforcements, or, for example, at the last moment, they res a Char shaman to fight you off and reclaim the cave for themselves, or something along those lines. And, for example, if you went the other direction of the Char shaman coming out, killing all of you, and then retaking even more of the land than they had before, then the land masses changed again. So in the case of having a trait chain in that space instead of just a single quest, what you have is essentially, I think in most cases, about 5 different quests that can be there anytime you get there. So a couple of weeks ago, I recommended people doing a trait chain which involved at the end fighting a big boss in this big frozen lake. And a bunch of the feedback I got was people who went on that trait quest to the area to experience that trait line. Some of them got there and did it from scratch, and they had an awesome experience. Other ones got there like halfway through the boss fight. Other ones got there and there was nothing there. Other ones got there and it was like some mixture of all of the above, whether they were only able to see like parts of it now and then maybe came back to the area. So not only is in that that mindset that a specific area should only have X amount of quests, not only is it different every time you go there because each of these quest chains are in different states, but also are they moving, and also even beyond that, and the second part of my response would be, they've actually realized this could be the case, and they realize that if you're in an area for really long, you can see all the trait and the quest chains to their completion. So you will eventually have that tiredness, and what they're committing to, and they've committed to this from the start of development, and they've reinforced this every now and then, is that they're actually going to be swapping out entire dynamic event chains. So they're taking one out, putting an entirely new one, inventing a new one, putting in that place. And I think their rotation was like once every couple of months, you're going to see entirely new sets of dynamic event chains in that area.
That's cool. But then at the same time, it's like, you know, what if I do like an amazing quest and I'm like, oh, when I reroll, I'm sort of doing that again. And then I go back and it's gone.
That's like complaining. Honestly, that there's too much content.
Yeah, like I would rather that than to have the same quests over, you know,
there forever.
2 years later, they're running the same goddamn quest for that same area. Like, yeah. it really makes playing Alts really hard to do, especially when you get to your third and fourth.
And I agree that you do have the problem of me saying, "Hey, do this chain," and other people not quite having the same experience as me because they came halfway through or they came when it wasn't even active. But in the end, the fact that you're able to do that and the fact that in this given area something awesome could happen or something else awesome could happen or something even else awesome could happen is pretty great. And I think does fight the whole boredness factor.
And obviously, it's the sheer number of them everywhere. Exactly. Just makes up for, like, even if you get tired of one, it's not like you'll be hanging around a single area of the game forever.
Yeah.
You're progressing constantly.
I was pleasantly surprised. Like, I was wandering around just like the first big area, I guess, and I was just constantly wandering in halfway through, and like some guys like throwing a mortar at me, and I'm like, "What the hell did I do?" See you later, mate. So,
yeah,
so it was interesting. It's good. It's cool.
You ran away like a coward.
Yeah,
is that what you're trying to say?
That is exactly what I did. I ain't sticking around.
Slit your belly right now.
So I guess we can move on to his next question.
Ran away like a coward.
Miss Durin, do you have any response to that, or do you
at least Durin in his losing pathetic battles, he died to the death. Although a pathetic one, he still died to the death.
Next question.
Next question was, so apparently there's mild like rumors of like a spectator mode.
Yep.
And as a person who sort of dabbled in addiction with League of Legends,
that's like, actually not playing, a rumor.
You know, I was.
Yeah, that's not good. No, let him finish. Ahead,
like, I used this, but I was like, oh man, the spectator mode's going to be great. And then I was watching it, I was like, why am I watching these people? Why don't I just play the game? So it's like, is spectator mode, like, that great of a thing? Like, is there really people clamoring for it?
I think it's the people who want this to be an esports thing. Like, the people who want the structured combat to, you know, be at MLG and things like that. Like, that, they want it for that.
Will it, though? Like, will Guild Wars 2 ever be useful? Like,
they
only
plan to go that direction.
But I think you can't plan for that sort of thing. It just kind of takes off.
Well, like, I think more so they plan to have the things in place so that is a possibility. And that's not going to be in place at launch. Like, they've already said that, like, spectator mode is going to be a post-launch feature, as well as some of the other things that go along with the esportsy kind of stuff. Like, that's all going to be post-launch.
I mean, would you want them, like, if there's a problem, like, if there's a problem between spectator mode and there's a problem between, like, a raid or whatever, or something like that, like, would people really want time spent on spectator mode, like, fixing that up?
Unfortunately,
like,
there
that?
Are people
just to
people
preview
would,
my
yes.
answer, it's absolutely, and I can't wait for it. But before I get to mine, Noob, what are your thoughts?
So the original Guild Wars, also always going to be saying that the original Guild Wars had this, but the original Guild Wars had the spectator mode. Mm-hmm. And it was usually really high level. So like the top 100 guilds
yeah.
would be fighting it out.
Yeah, exactly.
So it is very interesting to see what kind of tactics they use and how they work together.
Exactly.
That was very interesting about that.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're watching some random dudes no one cares about.
Yeah,
play.
Like you're
These
not
going like,
to see us in there doing that. Like,
yeah,
well, you might see me.
You'll see me.
People people are going to be spectating that. They're going to be spectating.
Pathetic people like these guys.
These
guys are chumps.
They're going to be spectating like, the, you know, the top guilds and watching them, exactly.
Well, I'll run you through them when I get to my answer. And then I'll give you a basic layout of how it worked. But just quickly, because I'm not sure if he has too big an opinion on the matter. Shav, do you have anything to say?
As someone who is actually interested in esports, vaguely, I mean, I watch a lot of StarCraft because it's actually quite fun, and when you are watching the best players go at it can actually be impressive, because, you know,
oh, yeah,
you're seeing
like,
things that you yourself can't do, and when you see someone else playing the game and absolutely bossing it at the game, you know, that's actually entertaining. So I'm all for spectator mode if they get balanced PvP, and PvP is exciting to watch. So I'm always
for
spectators.
With
naked ladies.
I watched a lot of League of Legends, like when I was going through my League of Legends phase. Like, I have no qualms with spectators.
Thank God you're out of
just
that
like,
now, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't. But like, I mean, in terms of like importance compared to other things, like if you know, would you want them focusing on spectator mode compared to like more content and things like that? Like, is it a vital thing? Like, are people clamoring for it compared
right.
to?
But now to get to my answer.
Things?
I think it is vital, and I think it is absolutely important. So how spectator mode worked in the first Guild Wars was you pretty much just hit a button, and it comes up with a list of the recorded pasts, I think it was.
I believe it was B.
Thank you. A recorded amount of top
I'm gonna
guilds
check that right now.
Versing one another, oh god. Top guilds versing one another in Hall Monuments and GVG. So that was 8v8, and in this case it would be 5v5, because what they're planning to broadcast would be structured PvP. So what that did was, not only did were you able to get entertainment value from watching high-level players, and as you've admitted, it can be pretty interesting, especially if they're quite skilled. But beyond that, I think I've said in a lot of cases around here, I think it's something about a shifting meta or a changing meta. What I mean by that, and for those that don't really understand the terminology, meta means metagame, and what that is, and it ties into some of your pretty much your next question. What happens when a game becomes quite competitive is people try to find the top builds for characters to verse one another with to be ultimately effective in PvP. Like obviously,
yeah, Crip Shot.
Yeah, Crip Shot, or I think it was Eviscerate Shock towards the start with Warrior and stuff like that. Things like that tend to surface. And obviously they surface through forums, they surface through videos on YouTube, but the thing is, not only are like, is it good for there to be, because like, they are playing, Guild Wars 1 was a PvP game. Like, even though a lot of people like Noob, for example, spend a lot of time PvE, PvP was the heartblood, like, of the lifeblood of Guild Wars 1. Like, it was essentially popularized and stayed popular because of GVG and ongoing tournament systems. So because they want to bring, and they want to cater to the same audience with Guild Wars 2, you have to come at it with a standpoint of they want to nurture PvP. Like, obviously, if you're sitting there going, well, I'd rather them spend time on PvE stuff, then you will be disappointed by the fact that they work on spectator mode, because you aren't quite seeing it the same way they are. They do want to really help PvP be awesome. And so to return to my point, when it comes to stuff like shifting metas, and what that means is people see the really effective builds at the moment, they see spectator modes, you can see that build, you can see how it works, you can see how the top person plays it. So not only do you have a factor of spreading the word about that build far faster than you would in the forums, but you're also essentially giving tips and tricks on the fly to new players to help them get better at the game and play different builds. And that was really important. It really accelerated the rate at which you can train up new people into PvP in the original Guild Wars by exposing them to spectator mode and letting them watch the top guild players. For example, if you are in this, let's just bring it to Guild Wars 2, for example, if you're wondering how to be a high DPS warrior but to stay a bit survivable, you can look at the top teams out there and see how their warriors do their jobs. Perhaps you just copy them, in fact, and copy them and after a while of playing it, try to play it like they did, try to pick up their tricks and eventually adapt it to your needs. Like that would be something that's implemented and is facilitated by the fact that it's a spectator mode. But even beyond that, and the reason why I love it, because I think I'm pretty decent. I'm hot shit at PvP. Let's just say that.
You're hot shit at I'm hot shit at PvE. My heroes were so good.
I'm not that great.
I spent thousands of K on heroes.
I was at least quite decent at it. And the reason I love it was when you see a current spike in a meta. For example, a lot of people suddenly using a particular build because it's quite effective. By watching structured PvP, in this case. Recordings, you can see how other top guilds deal with that build, or what counter builds can be there, or how you can effectively outmode a particular build by employing this other one, and in that way it allows things to shift and control itself and assists the internal balancing mechanism of a game like this, where you do have such a huge pool of builds to make and a huge pool of skills and abilities to choose from. And so, in essence, it improves the overall extended long lifetime of PvP by having a case where things adapt and things keep growing organically. That's why I think spectator is important. What are your thoughts? What's your response to my statement? It was long, but what's your response?
I think, it's... Like, personally, I'm not going into this game with PvP. Going into this game because, I do like the... it may seem like I was shitting on them before, but, I'm genuinely interested in how the dynamic quests work. I'm interested in the PvE stuff. It looks all interesting, the combat and things like that. So, I'm of the mindset that's like, spectator mode to me isn't that vital. So, I'm probably approaching it from a different, viewpoint, and, different subsets of people find different things.
Right.
Important. So, it's hard to argue with what you've said, considering how fleshed out it was.
It doesn't
and how...
necessarily ever detract from the game, so it's never really a problem.
It does detract from the fact that the people who are working on that could be working on, for example, new dynamic quests and that kind of stuff. But
I don't mean the game, he's going to be broken because of the spectator.
Oh, no,
I'm
absolutely.
Just saying, in a time when they might announce, oh, spectator mode's coming, and PvE is, or whatever, will be like, what about this fix? And this month we were working on this, so
yeah.
So it's like,
all right, it is B, by the way. If you want to go on, launch Guild Wars, and launch, there's a lot of matches going on right now. In fact,
cool.
The whole dev team working on one thing. I mean, Guild Wars, the ArenaNet team is a large team. What do they have? 200 people now or something stupid
his ass
like that?
Right now.
Yeah, Durin is extremely not using the.
I was about to say that. How is Durin still alive at this point?
Yeah, but the thing is, he's not using Lich Form.
I don't really need to.
Using, the thing.
I haven't died yet.
Durin's at 300 health there for a second.
Yeah, but I got away. Save it when you need it.
They're gonna enslave you, and you're gonna have to sell your body. You're gonna do tricks in the alleyway to earn them copper.
This is an extended fight. You guys have been at these dudes for quite a while now.
Yeah,
I think they're sticking together.
Yeah, I think they finally pushed us back.
Cowards, go and fight. Lead your men into battle. What are you doing? Stop
not
running
away. The team. I think it's Robbie Mac is leading.
Cowards.
Yeah, Robbie Mac's leading the team, but we kind of got outnumbered 2-1 at least, if not 3-1. It was.
I can't believe
rough.
You guys did so well. Good job. But anyway, I don't believe you. Would you have any opinions on this topic, or are you too busy playing the game?
I am going to try to not die real quick here. I don't know how long I'm going to do it.
So, Shav, any closing thoughts on the spectator mode stuff?
None that I've said. Yeah.
And just to amend any uncertainties, spectator modes has been announced. It was a feature in the original Guild Wars. They are planning to put it in. I think their words were, they have to see. They have to see how much effort it would take to put in and how many people are clamoring for it before they.
Well, that's an interesting bug.
Wow.
Longest knockdown ever.
Jesus Christ.
But the important part is I'm still alive.
You're hidden.
Now go Leashman, see if it changes. Let's see if you're still locked down.
Yep.
This spectator mode is why stuff like this happens. This is my problem with the spectator mode.
Guys, but yes, it has been announced. It will most probably make it into the game, but only after release. So.
Shit, he spotted me.
Oh, I can see your panties. Even more.
Oh, no. Oh my god, he's cast. That's amazing. You need to fight this guy like this.
Attack!
Totally straight me. I love it. I wonder what the other guy sees.
I like how your team completely abandoned you and how you're just floating around.
Dude, Rossi would love this so much, Pantsu. So much.
On the
you'll just see this stream shut down and a ReadaNet message saying working on it.
Working
you don't
as
understand
a pen,
how
easy.
Many screen caps I took right there. I think I took like
hey cool. How'd you get out of it? Oh god, owls.
I got out of it by dying.
Yeah, I think you're done. GG'd. Anyway. I guess we only have about 15 minutes or 10 minutes left here. So, which of these three do you think is the most interesting? What's your favorite of these three questions? Ask that one.
Well, I think there's the obvious one that leads into this. Is like this guild, the Guild Wars 2's had this whole point of like everyone can res, everyone can heal. You know, you're not going to be waiting for everyone. But what you just said is like, well, no, there is going to be cookie cutter builds. There are going to be specific builds that do the most damage, that tank the best, and it's like, well, how do you merge the philosophy of, you know, letting everyone do what they want, and yet still have this side of, like, metagame, where, you know, there are the best builds, and if somebody's like, well, I want to play this way, and the raid's like, tough shit, you're going to play how we want it, because right. this is what does the best. It's like, how do you balance between those two ideals and still make the game fun for both people?
Right. So yeah, you're pointing down the question to, will there be like cookie cutter roles, and how do we feel like it balances, if we feel they'll find a balance between options and optimal builds. Yeah.
I think the idea of like optimal builds is pretty much always going to exist. I mean, I don't know of any, I mean, this is the, probably the most different approach I've seen somebody take in terms of builds in a game, and yet you're still going to see that stuff. I don't know how they would do it where that just wouldn't exist.
Right. Well, then
what's the point then? Have classes. Why not just say that, you know, this guy can be a tank, this guy, like...
I'll get to that. Noob, do you have any response?
Well, like Jern said, of course there's going to be optimized builds. Like, that's almost an extension of giving people free reign. They're, of course, going to find, like, the best builds to use if you let them choose whatever they want. But it's not like these builds will... I feel like this is a lot different from the original Guild Wars, because the original Guild Wars, even if there were a variety of different builds you can take on, they were still substantially different depending on the class.
Absolutely.
Let's say monks, it's all focused on healing because you're a monk. And stuff, and elementalists, it's all AoE. It's all fire damage, etc. For this, they've definitely opened it up even more. So I'm assuming it wouldn't be just a couple of optimized builds that everyone would be running, but it would be a lot more variation among those, like, best builds that
And to answer your question about, what's the point, why have classes at all then, my answer to that would be, look at the Secret World. They're trying to do the whole no-class thing, and they're still going to be cookie-cutter builds, even within their whole program as well.
Like, yeah, but, like, my problem is, like, you play the entire game with this ideal that you're allowed to do what you want, and then you hit the end game, and all of a sudden you're, like, as an example, I'm not saying it's past, but your necromancer is useless in a raid and PvP.
I feel because like, you know, being forced into like a certain build or something, like, that's not... I don't feel like that's ArenaNet doing that so much as, your raid. Like you were talking before, like, if your raid is telling you have to build this way if you want to, want to raid with us or whatever, that's not really anything that ArenaNet can control so much. I mean, I understand that there's a reason why that's going to be the case, and it probably has a lot to do with, certain abilities being more viable in that instance than others. But the problem with that is that if you were to go through and try to balance against that, you're just going to run into the same issue with, you know, instead of A and B traits, it's going to be C and D. Like, it's going to be a constant thing. Like, it's the nature of having the internet available to everybody and being able to share all that information with each other. I mean, you have these people that, you know, create these crazy spreadsheets and crunch those numbers down to the, you know, thousands of the decimal to find the best builds. I mean, it's going to happen as long as there are people that are going to continue doing that.
Absolutely. So what's your response to that, by the way? Like, what do you say to the fact that no matter what they do, they'll always be... I reckon there'll be a stratosphere of maybe about 4 to 5 builds a class. And that's expanding from the original Guild Wars, where I thought there was probably around 2 to 3 real proper builds for a class.
Like, I have no problem with that, and I wouldn't call myself an MMO veteran, but I've been through a number of MMOs, and I know that, you know, as I'm playing a class, someone will be like, why are you taking that ability, you idiot? This one's clearly the best one.
Right.
So, I totally understand that. It's just, like, Guild Wars 2 might be someone's first MMO. Like, right. It might be someone's first forays, and, you know, they're going to be told throughout, like, no, you can play your Necromancer, you can pick all defensive abilities as long as you get through it. And then they hit the end game, and like their build isn't viable,
right?
And it's sort of like how do they well balance the ideology of telling you you can be totally this, but then, you know, you as a launching an MMO, you do have to take into account the players that you're creating or the players that will play your game.
Right.
So how do you balance an ideology between letting you do what you want and then also saying when it comes down to it, you know, you are gonna have to probably compromise on some things. It's just interesting that they're going so far with the sort of ideal of you can do what you want and not sort of saying at the end of the day, no, there are going to be optimal builds.
I think that my response to that would be, and finally, now that you guys have chimed in, I think I can get into mine because it might be a bit... I'll try to shorten it down. So in my response would be, there's a difference between the major experience in most cases of there being a raid kind of situation and people being forced. Like, for example, in a lot of MMOs, if you're in the endgame raids, you're generally stated to be, hey, you're playing, like, you're for example, a paladin, WoW. You're expected to pretty much have this build with this gear. Like, there is a particular pinnacle of the tank in WoW. Like, Dury, would you agree to that?
I'm sorry, I was sure totally not
fighting his big ass battle.
Essentially, let's just come from an external perspective.
Played WoW Monsters.
Okay. The thing in this was, there's a very much big difference between structured PvP, world versus world, and PvE. In structured PvP, that's where the real number crunching, optimal builds will come into it, because you have the people who will say that. Well, structured PvP, remember the structured PvP, I'm not sure if you've been exposed to it too much, is a very specific system. It's 4 maps, of which are randomized, so you kind of have to have a build which adapts to all 4 maps, but aside from that, it's still just a capture point system. So in each of these 4 maps, you're still going to have a small selection of builds which would be optimal for A, adapting between the maps, and B, achieving capturing points, like achieving that end goal. But in systems like PvE and PvP, on the other hand, sorry, PvE and WBW, as you've seen from the stream already, there is such a large gamut of things you have to be able to do in both PvE and WBW that the combat to there being an optimal build is manifold. One side of things is, unlike in other games where you essentially make your build and you drive it to that pinnacle, the very fact that weapon switching in Guild Wars 2 entirely changes how your class plays, in itself, significantly combats that in PvE. Again, in PvP, in structured PvP, you will have people who say, no, you have to be a warrior with 2 swords in one hand and rifle the other. That's the only way to play, right? But in World vs. World and in normal PvE, even in high-end hardcore dungeons, you're going to have situations where, because everyone is entirely different depending on their current weapon and what the current sort of group dynamic is, or who's in your group. For example, if you have 2 necros, 2 warriors, and Ellie, everyone would have to do different things than if there's just 5 warriors, for example. Because of that, and because of weapon switching, you're going to have a situation where it's going to be really hard or almost impossible to find a perfect build, because there's just way too many permutations, there's way too many dungeons out there, there's way too many situations like this in World vs. World, where in some cases, for example, this one in particular, it doesn't really matter what build you have. Like, it just, all that matters is you being there and being a meat space and having supply to give to the battering ram. Like, that's all you need to do. Like, there's cases where you just don't have the same build requirements as you do in structured PvP. So I think your point is absolutely correct in structured PvP, and eventually they will drive down to that lack of choice, there being particular optimal builds, because that's almost inevitable.
Yeah, like, I think it's just my honest love of Guild Wars 2 approach of trying to be so different,
yeah,
that I worry that when it comes down to it, when it boils down to it,
yeah,
it's going to, you just, no, it's no different. It's definitely just an MMO. Yeah. Like, and,
right, and
like,
structured PvP,
it's not
even pretty much.
It's not having a go at Guild Wars 2. You know, I pre-purchased the game. I'm going to get full into the game. I want it to be able to extend this unique approach.
But I think, I'm not sure if you'd agree with me on this point, but I think just from what we've seen here, if you've been watching the stream, or once you get into it, when you start getting into, because a lot of people out there are still unconvinced as to whether the Trinity is gone in Guild Wars 2, as an example. People don't realize that you can literally go into any dungeon or any situation with any group of players, no matter what classes they are, and find a way within those classes, just in terms of what current weapons they're using or who's using what weapon at any given time, to approach any situation, as long as the players are good and everyone's doing what they need to do. It is crazy that they've achieved that balance already. And I've seen it, like, for example, in huge boss fights, I had put 40 people boss fight in as a level 10, in an area, and everyone was doing slightly different things, everyone had completely different variations of their builds, but it was working, and everyone was working together.
Oh, they made a breach. Oh my god.
They got through the door. This is some kick-ass, like, this is, yeah, what I wanted to show at the start of the World vs. World live stream, and I'm happy that we got it on screen towards the end. But this is some serious keep defense for this shit right here. They got a battery ram up, really kicking ass.
Like Snick said, I feel like if you play PvE, there would be, or even World vs. World, I feel like there would be no problem with you picking whatever you want. Because the way Guild Wars 2 is, it's not like you have all of these skills that are perfectly open. It's only half your skill bar. So you can only, like, optimize it to a certain degree even then. Because, you know, you have a set number of 5 skills, depending on your weapon.
Yeah,
and that would mean that
you always have that, no matter right, who is playing that class. And
exactly. So
on top of that, there is a defined max stats on your gear. Like, you can only get so far in terms of gearing up. Everyone is eventually equal. After about 6 months, everyone will be equal in top FPV. Like, World vs. World.
I was going to say something.
Yeah, I was transitioning back to what you were saying.
I completely forgot.
All I wanted to say was, I pretty much agree with everything that Seneca said. Like, the whole metagame aspect of the PvP is inherent to, you know, competitive PvP stuff, and there will be optimal builds, but that doesn't mean they're going to be permanently the optimal build. Like, that's going to shift.
Are they always changed with PvP, balancing,
Yeah, exactly. ArenaNet aren't just going to sit on their asses once they release a game. They're going to continue to balance it if they care about PvP. If they're going to implement, you know, spectator mode and whatnot, they're going to care about that stuff, and they're going to balance it, and it will shift. And that's what people who are into PvP generally are interested in, is, you know, finding optimal builds and, you know, following the shifting metagame and finding new ways to exploit that. But as everyone has said, you know, in PvE, it really isn't going to matter what build you choose. You know, if someone in PvE is telling you, oh, you should be playing like this, they're a douche, and stop playing with them.
And I can't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree if that's in a pub, but then in a raid environment, that, you know, that does happen.
Like, I was just saying, like, I think you're wrong, because, right, even at level 10, I cannot believe it, but I have totally been in situations where I've been a small group of dudes doing something that seemed like an impossible task. In our case, it was wasn't a dungeon, but it was a extended PvE event chain which ended in a huge boss fight. And we literally, at no point did we say, hey, it's because of our builds that's the problem. It was really like, hey, we failed it. let's just try a little bit harder and do it a little bit smarter. You got through this.
Get more dudes.
I'm going to reference the original Guild Wars once again. In PvE wise, there were only a couple of reasons why you would use optimized builds when playing PvE. One would be for speed clears, so you want to get through stuff really quickly. So for farming and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly, farming.
And so like these were high level areas like Underworld or like speed clearing and vanquishing stuff in hard mode. But that would only be necessary if you're trying to do it within a certain amount of time, so you can repeat it over and over again. If you just have your group and you're just playing the game, you never really needed a certain build, as long as it wasn't ridiculous, like you were trying your best to have the worst build in the world.
Yeah.
Like, you could easily accomplish this thing. Like, right. Even then, if your team could easily carry it.
Yeah, and in GW1, you did have the situation where, in terms of team builds, you did kind of have to have a certain amount of healing in your team, a certain amount of warriors in your team, whatever damage.
And they got past that with Guild Wars 2, because you have self-healing.
But even to that extent, like in Guild Wars 2, the fact that you can literally roll with pretty much anyone, and by pretty much I mean anyone, you can roll with anyone.
You can have 7 mesmers.
Yeah, and totally work out. Like, you can play anything in high-level world versus world and PvE in Guild Wars 2, and I'm already convinced of it from what I've seen.
Like, you know, like I've said, this isn't like riffing on Guild Wars 2.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, just to allay your fears.
How much did Blizzard pay you to be on here?
I think I'm going to sit here and say it's not going to be a problem in PvE and World versus World. I think it will be a problem in PvP, in structured. But
PvP,
like, when I come into an MMO, like, I don't want to have to read like elitist jerks and stuff like that in order to be, like, I want to, in a way, I kind of want to remove that metagame. I want it to all be about what I want to do. You know, if I want to pick this like group of abilities, like, I will easily get in a group as like as the next guy. You know,
are you worried about structure, or are you worried about PvE? Like, which are you more?
Well, I'm worried about that. I'm entirely stupid about what to do in like a game like World of Warcraft, where like I have no idea. Where, you know, I would follow a build to the T purely because, you know, some guy, random guy who spends 30 hours doing it says,
"Hey, this is the best."
You know, this will give you one more DPS than if you did it this way. And I was like, right, I'll do that. You know, I'm no good at this game. But if that's the optimal build, and I won't get shouted at every time I join a group, that's fine. So I kind of want to remove that. In a way, I do want to remove that metagame of an MMO. I just want to be able to log in. You know, I don't want to have to open my browser to look up what the latest builds are.
Again, are you talking about structured, or are you talking about PvE and WW?
You will not see that in PvE, I guarantee.
You'll not see that in PvE, no matter how hard the dungeon is, and no matter how hard the event is. I'm firmly convinced of it from what I've already seen, because I've already played about 30 hours of this game. Already firmly convinced that's not been the case. But are you worried about it in terms of PvE, or are you actually worried about it in terms of structure? Because I actually agree with you. It will be a problem.
Well, the thing about structured is you want to have something like that, because the point of structured is high competitive PvP. You want to win. So if you're not going for the most optimized build, then you're defeating the point of having like a structured PvP on winning with like and getting the highest rank or something like that.
But
doesn't that go against Arena's net whole ideology of Guild Wars 2?
Of the rest of the game, maybe. But the thing is about, I mean, you can tell. Look at the fact that everybody has the same stats and the same gear in structured PvP. Clearly, that is the direction they plan to go with that specific mode of the game. And for everybody else who doesn't want to do that, there is World v. World.
Oh man, and World versus World, like, the thing is, like, I'm sure that your fears have based to some extent, but again, that is only a third of the game. There's still PvE and PvP.
Yeah, I understand.
It's not even a third of the game. I wouldn't consider
to
be an entire third of the game.
I feel like that is,
I'm just
like
saying,
a secondary
mode. I bet in
you're not a person, you're a sheeple. Sheeple would.
Anyway,
I think we should
move on.
I think when you ground it down, structured I see what you mean by, you know, it's the game.
Yeah. And so we should move on. I do want to touch on, because I think we're hitting our 1.5 hour to 1 hour and 45 minute mark. I do want to just touch on, because there's a bunch of, I'm going to read off these, no, I won't. Just read the AMA. There's a bunch on there. I've actually posted my thoughts are on the most interesting things to get from the AMA from the Guild Wars forums on Giant Bomb. So check that out. I made a post there. But aside from that, I'm going to skip the rest of the news. I'm going to skip to our main topic, our final topic of the day, and that is trait tiers and skill tiers. We talked about it last week. We speculated on it last week. And we finally got to see what they do this week. Uberama, what are your thoughts on the matter? I'm going to start with
skill tiers?
I mean, is there a way to find someone? Like, I can look up the credits for this game and find who the fuck this person is. I am so
Remember, noob, you are being recorded right now.
Right. Yeah.
And this is live.
Technically, right, this could be used as evidence.
I'm a Syrian living in Damascus.
Calling in from Ohio, USA.
Whatever the fuck his name is.
Yeah.
Office. Okay.
Noob rips the shit out of it, I just want to say I actually think it's a good idea. Their justification of it was legitimate.
There's a difference between it being a good idea and
just choose all good skills, and that'll be it. Why would anyone use the traits that are shit? Everyone would use the same four traits.
We'll start with skills because our opinions would differ a bit on these traits, because I may be leaning towards
traits. Traits are more lax on.
Yeah, but the skill system is on the. To break it down, what they've done is essentially for the skill system, so for utility skills, again, the right-hand side of your bar, so you're talking about your heal, your elite, and the three other skills which you can freely pick, right? At the moment, it's broken down to tiers, so when you start the game, you have a skill points to spend, and you have to first unlock the first tier of skills before getting the second tier of skills and then the third tier of skills in order to make your way through all the skills to actually have all the utility skills at your disposal. So, for example, if you look at it as it is at the moment, and you can, if you remember the past and you want these specific skills from the total skill pool, you have to get through the first tier by spending, I think it was 1 point each, then and so on until you finally get the skills you want. And what you'd end
Except
up doing.
It's not one for this one. It's one.
Yeah, and so this is the problem. So, Noob, I'll let you do your diatribe before I go into a bit more of an explanation.
Okay, so last week when we discussed this, you were spouting shit about how that's a great idea, and if it's 1 point each, no problem, it's just 1 point. And that was already, like, in infinitely many ways wrong. And then they decided to not just. So, basically, how they do it is. There's three rows of seven skills, and to go through each tier, you need to buy five skills. On the first row, you need to waste 5 points on five worthless skills, and then in the second row,
to be fair,
you need
to
waste
worthless.
15 points on 15 worthless or five worthless skills, and then you need 6 points each to get like unlock each skill. Right? Beforehand, those skills on the third tier would at most cost 7 points. Now they cost over 26 points. Why? Why? Why?
Okay, I didn't know about skills. That's bollocks.
Wait. I'll break
why
it down.
Why am I spending 27 points or 26 points on skills when I could have gotten them for 7?
Okay.
Why are they forcing me to do this? Why are they?
Dude, what are your thoughts on the system? You saw it as well, right?
Yeah, I basically kind of agree with Noob on that. I mean, I don't agree that all of them are.
Let's just kill him.
I don't agree that all of the stats are shit on the first tier. I think that really all just depends on the class that you're playing. So, but yeah, like the idea that I have to spend the 5 points in tier one, and then the 15 points in tier two, and more specifically, and let me back up here.
You're gonna bring it up the screen, right? You're gonna bring up the screen.
Yeah, I'll bring it up on the screen. But more specifically,
you should just get out of there.
In order to unlock the next tier of abilities, you have to spend the 5 points within that tier. So when you see here on the second tier, where it says 4 out of 5, you should be seeing that. Just yeah, there we go. When you see 4 out of 5 on the second tier, if I wanted to say put a point into for instance, you know, Spectral Grasp on tier one, that will not unlock the third tier for me. I must spend some number of 3 points on some ability in the second tier, as terrible as they are, in order to unlock that third tier.
Huh. Yeah.
And I think that's even...
So what he's saying is, essentially, it's not the fact that you have to have 10 skills purchased total to get to the third tier. You actually have to spend... points on 5 of the 7 skills on that second tier.
20 skill points.
Is that to stop 60... like someone becoming jack of all trades? Like,
no, it's to help people become jacks of all trades. What we had before
what they're doing.
Sorry, I'm
yeah. To stop people from being too specific. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Right.
So what we had before was a one big pool of skills. You saw that before. Those all used to be one big pool instead of being spread out across three trees. And you used to be able to just pick and choose which ones you want. Each were worth various amount of skill points. So some would be worth up to 7. Elites could be up to 15, or like double digits. And so the lowest end ones would be 1 skill point. So what they've done now, what we saw from the image last week, and what I was talking about, and I think I may have been wrong.
You were so wrong.
I think the image totally said what I thought it was that each point, no matter what tier was on, was still 1 skill point to purchase. I thought that was what the image showed. It might have been a low quality image, but either way, what they have at the moment is, as they rightly say, you have to spend about 20 points before you can see the even start. Spending points on the third tier of skills.
So you need 26 points to get a skill.
Yeah,
on
in
the
third tier. Yeah. So that in itself is pretty crappy. I thought you'd be able to spend like 11 points, 5 of them one, if they all costed 1 to get to that third tier. So it wasn't going to be too big of a problem. But now that you've spent 20, that's like level 15, level 16 before you can even get to the third tier. That's assuming you even want any of the ones in the second tier and first tier, right?
So you can tell you as a necromancer, you pretty much don't.
Yeah, that's the bigger problem.
What's that reasoning?
The reasoning was the option shock, I think it was the how they termed it. A new player getting their first skill point and seeing that huge pool of skills to choose from would be kind of at a loss as to which ones to buy.
Let's artificially limit his choices to get them.
What they found
isn't that kind of the point that you have so many options to explore? Like,
I agree.
The point of Guild Wars 2.
It's not even like encouraging people to be jack of all trades. It's because once you get the skills you want, then you're going to spend it on those skills anyways. You're just forcing people in what, you know, like placement you're going to have to get those skills. And then not to mention,
their version of saying the same thing is they're forcing people to try new options rather than the ones they originally would have intended.
Well, no, because
they were
going to
get it anyways in the future.
Once someone finds their favorite few abilities, you know, if they do reroll, they're going to be like, oh, I guess I'll have to put it into this shitty ability, but I'm never going to use it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There's no exploration of abilities there.
Even worse, and perhaps the single biggest problem with the system was, this is all assuming you know what you want in the first place, right? What they actually did was, not only do you have to spend 5 points, you actually have to buy 5 skills in each tier before you can move to the next one, right? Not only that, but you can't even see the descriptions of the next tier until you finish purchasing 5 in the current tier. Not 4, not 3, but 5. You have to purchase all 5 before you can even see the descriptions of the next tier.
ArenaNet hates her guts. This is clearly the
reason. You can't even plan ahead as to go, this is what I want.
I think as well, like, there's like this reward thing as well. Like, I keep referring to it, but will the Warcraft change the way that you got like talent points and the way you got abilities so that each and every level you'd receive something? Like, each and every level you get a talent point or ability or something big.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, with this system, you're going to work your ass off, or, you know, ignoring last time when you got a skill point for doing jack all.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to work pretty hard for a skill point, and then you're going to realize, oh, I have to put it in ability that I don't even want. And, like, you're going to be kind of deflated about it. Like, you're going to be like, what's the point? Why am I working towards a skill point when I'm forced to put it into something that I don't want to?
Right.
And the thing I ran into was, you know, that crushing feeling when you had to spend 5 skill points on a skill you clearly didn't want.
And that's exactly right. The thing
is, the time I came to realization, I was, like, level 22 when I got my, I was level 22 when I started. So when I put it to my, like, when I finally got my first tier 3 skill, I realized that in 8 levels from now, I have a, you know, elite skill available for me. And now I'm going to have to save up, so I can't even touch the rest of the tier 3 skills, because I need to save up for my elite skills. That's what I realized.
And it's like, you know, you could argue the same thing happens with talent trees, but at the same time, talent trees in an MMO sense are quite minimal compared to your abilities.
One.
You get like a point in, you know, 1% dodge reduction. It's not like an ability. It's not a big thing. It's not like an animation thing. Like, I think it's more to do, in my opinion.
Even tiered elites. Why?
That's kind of silly. There's like 2 in one tier and then 1 in the next tier, and that's it.
Hey, spend 60 skill points on this elite. Have fun.
And yeah. I think Adeus Knight has something to say from the chat. Wow, first time I've actually pulled something from the chat today. I'm sorry if I said your name wrong, but says it doesn't even matter. The only skills that are hard to get are tier two elites. You have tons of skill points by the time you unlock the elites. It's kind of correct. Like, as we were saying, we are really complaining about something that will only be a problem for about the first 20 levels of the game. But after 20 levels, you will pretty much have all the DLD skills unlocked. You will, because you just have enough skill points.
No, because elite-wise, so let's say need 26 skills to get your tier 3 skills.
It's a single tier 3
by skill. By that time, if you... That's me completing a shitload of skill quests, right? And then...
Well, let's see. You get 1 point for leveling up, right? So from level 5 onwards, so that's 15 points at level 20.
I can tell you, at level 20, you pretty much have to have gotten all the skill points up to Kessick's Hills if you're playing as a human in order to get the amount of skill points you would need to unlock tier 3.
Okay,
just to unlock tier 3.
That's what you had. Right?
That's what I had, yeah.
26 skills. So 20 skill points, just 26 skill points to just unlock one skill on the tier 3. And then by the time you're like level 22 or something like that, and then just 8 levels from now, you're going to have to save up for an elite skill unless you want it later, right?
Oh, right, yeah, because you'll be spending your skills as you get them.
Exactly. So you can't spend any more skill points on tier 3 unless you really grind for skill points.
Right.
You're going to have to save up for that.
I think as well, like, I we're approaching this differently. Like, you're looking at, like, numbers in a way, and I'm looking at, like, weird, like, choices and stuff. It's like, ArenaNet has talked about, you know, these dynamic quests and things, but they're forcing you to do these skill quests.
Yeah.
Like, every single time you roll a character, you're going to be like, oh, I guess I have to do all these 10 skill quests just so I can get my elite ability.
And the fact that...
Because, you know, I'm not particularly knowledgeable of Guild Wars 2 at the moment, as you know, so I don't know how these things work specifically, but it sounds like if you want to get the best out of your character, whatever build you're going for...
Right, you're grinding.
You're going to have to... Yeah, you're going to have to... And that sounds fucking atrocious as an actual mechanic.
Yeah.
Like... Mechanically,
you hit it on the head there. Like,
well,
the thing is, right now, I have to admit that some skill points are really fun. Like, some of them are like jumping puzzles, and some of them like underwater quests. And it's pretty cool. But for the vast majority of them, it's just an NPC in the middle of nowhere. You have to walk up to, you talk to him for a couple of seconds, you fight him for a couple of seconds, then you get a skill point, right? And before, it was awesome. Like, when they first implemented it, so when it was a big pool of skills and you could buy it at any order you wanted, it was awesome because you could play the game organically. You could save up to the ones you want. You didn't have to do all the skill quests because you knew that by saving up, you'll be able to get all the skills you needed in the right order as you want it, right? But now, because they have this limitation, I think the words you said specifically, which are quite applicable here, are if you want to get the most out of your character, which, to be honest, it's as if they didn't realize that most players of Guild Wars 2, at least in the harder core like us, would want to get the most out of our character. And we're the ones who'd be pissed about it. We're the center of their audience. We are the hardest of
the
people who
pre-purchased the game and are playing the beta right now.
Yeah, like you know, I was saying before about cookie cutter builds, and you quite correctly convinced me. No, that's not going to happen. But it seems with skill points, like getting abilities, seems no matter what build you're doing, no matter whether it's an organic build, whether it's a cookie cutter build, getting abilities is at the base of every single character.
Absolutely, yeah.
So grinding these skill points will become essential to the game, which, when you think about it, is kind of a horrendous thought.
Absolutely.
Like, grinding for skill points will become, like, as you're playing a character, it's like, oh, I guess I'm going to do these quests, and then it's like, oh, I guess I'm also going to have to ground down my skill points every single time I roll the character.
Yeah, and like Deus Knight is saying, and to combine with what Noob said earlier, like, because the shit isn't one tier of elites, once you get to level 22 and the elites start getting within sight, because it's about 30 point, yeah, I think it was level 30 for the first
elite.
That's
where I am right now.
Exactly. Then you start realizing, hey, elites are like 15 points. That means I'm going to have to save all the skill points I get from 22 all the way to 30, which is like 8 hours to 10 hours of play. Maybe even longer in some cases, depending on how you approach the game, in order to unlock the elite skill as soon as it's available to me. Which means you would have to have spent the perfect distribution of skill points before that, those first 26 skill points, in order to get everything you needed from the first tier.
Does this character have polio? Oh, never mind.
Everything you needed from the first tier, everything you needed from the second tier, and everything you needed from the one skill you really wanted from the third tier, in order to be able to comfortable to do that. And that is...
Well, I mean,
Eight levels without having to save up skill points. Are you serious? Just to get your elite when it's actually available?
Well, yeah, that's another good point. It's like, for eight levels, you're going to be the same four abilities all the time. Or, like, the same few abilities. And it's just like, why? Well, I'm paying for this game. Like, let me do what I want with my character. Like, I know you've got to balance it. I know you can't say, here's a million skill points, do whatever. But it's like, within the context of the game, be like, alright, every level will give you this. Like, that option pool sounds amazing, because, you know, I can dance between different abilities. Like, you know, I'm shit at saving up for things. I'm really atrocious. So I'll be like, right, I'm going to save up for an elite ability. Three levels later, I'll have spent all my skill points, because that's just how I am. And, you know, I've spent it on being able to summon a rose out of my collar, because, you know, it sounded cool at the time. So, like...
And you're right. Yeah, you're right.
I agree.
Well, it's just like, I want to explore all the options, and you're not allowing me to, and it's like, why? When you had... admittedly, it sounds a little flawed the way it was, but, you know, don't take it from one extreme to the other. Yeah. Like, because that never works. It never works.
And I do have an addendum to this.
Having listened to you talk about it now, yeah, it seems like a pretty terrible idea. The only thing I will say is that from playing the first beta weekend, like, I was playing a Necro, and I wanted to play a minion-focused Necro, so I went out and bought all the minion skills, and by level 13, I had all the minion skills I wanted to use, and those were the only three utility skills I was probably ever going to use, and
absolutely.
I was level 13.
Yeah, exactly.
If you think that all I had to save up for then was an elite, and I was probably only going to buy one or two of those, and then I'm done. And then what am I supposed to do for the other? What's the level cap? Like 40 or something?
80.
It's like
80.
Oh, screw it. So what am I going to do between level 13 and 80 when I have no...
So again, leave those sitting around. You're going to end up buying something.
I'd buy it, but I wouldn't use it. So what's the point of...
No, but if you look at it, you're like, oh, this might be interesting. Maybe I'll try something new.
Exactly. You'd use it, but only for the wrong reason. You'd use it because you're bored of what you've been doing for 26 levels.
Yes.
And that is the wrong reason to have to diversify.
I think as well, you could build like builds within a build. Like, you could be like, all right, so I've put all of these into my minion focus, and I've got, you know, 4 billion skill points left over. You know, and let's see what, you know, kind of a different one would be, and then you could pump your points into that, and it would allow you to explore it. Whereas with this system, it seems it's very much encouraging you to sort of arbitrarily spend your points in order to get to the next level. It's not saying explore everything. It's saying we need a system to limit the amount of points you're putting into things, so this is an arbitrary, contrived way of doing it. Like, there's no fun to it. There's, like, at least with that, you know. Because you would. Come on. 13, you're right. 13 to 80.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't be like, I'm just going to sit on these 400 points that I've got. And,
I'm not saying
know,
I wouldn't
rum.
Spend them.
Obviously.
But then again, if I expect all my traits to be minion traits, then it's not really
going to... You don't want the player to be sitting there going, what next? Yeah?
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't want to hit that endpoint for quite a while, and I guess this system does help with that, but you're right in saying it's a bit too extreme in that direction. I think my addendum would be, because I think we've pretty much touched on every side of this except for a couple, and my personal addition would be, it does depend on which class that you're playing as to whether this affects you too much. Like, I know specifically for Warrior, I looked at the skill tiers for it, and I was actually quite happy with what they gave me for the first tier and second tier. Like, within the first about 8 to 13 levels, I'd have most of what I needed to be a really effective Warrior within the first couple of tiers. And I think they did it really well, because as we talked about last week, there's a couple of ways of doing it. There's ways which they did it, which they ended up doing it, and Durin totally called, and I said was probably likely, but the way I didn't want them to do it, which is spreading out the skills so that maybe some of the skills you want is on a later tier arbitrarily, right? Which is what they did. Alternatively, which is what I hoped they would do, and I think they successfully achieved this with the Warrior, was to spread them out in terms of complexity. So, for example, the first tier is actually filled with stuff that you pretty much need as a Warrior, essentials. The second tier is filled with stuff that was things you wouldn't necessarily think a Warrior could use, but if you do use them effectively, it's a very interesting way to play. And it ended up building up to, like, for example, a Warrior, by the time you get to the third tier, a Warrior could very effectively expand into support from just damage. Like, it was literally least complex skills to most complex skills. And I think they actually really excellently nailed the skill tier system for Warriors. But then I looked at the Necromancer one, and I agree, it is fucked. Like, half the shit in the earlier tiers, you just don't want. Like, straight up, I would never use this. I know I'm spending a skill point here, like a bunch of skill points here, at knowing full well in advance that I don't like the way this skill works, but it's less terrible than this other skill, which I really don't like the way it works, so I guess I'm going to spend it here. Maybe I'll try it once or twice, but I know I'm going to hate it. Like, that's the kind of situation they're putting us in now. And it's...
Yeah, you're picking what's less terrible. Like, at yeah. some point, when you're making your decision on what's less shit, like, yeah. you know you've got a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Because a really big problem.
It should be, like, what's coolest to use? And, you know... I don't know how you fix it. You know, that's why ArenaNet get paid, and that's why we sit here complaining about the fact. So I don't know how you fix it, but I'm just saying they have to fix it. They have to think yeah. of something.
And I guess we can round it out, and we can round the discussion out, and maybe even round the show out with it's a beta. They can change it. They're going to take this feedback and probably work with it, and maybe change it around a bit, and maybe so even revert it.
We need to spam their inbox with just this segment. The podcast.
And then, if you have any information on who made those changes, I'm very interested.
Yeah. I'm so not cool with this weird, like, death threat, like, call out.
I'll throw a surprise party in their home.
We'll have that, but then we'll have cake. Or we'll have it interspersed cake. With the bit where he said Soviet Union. Just that, just randomly dropped in.
So I guess what we'll do is we'll close out the show there. There is a bunch of more news. Again, check out the forums. In the AMA thread, I posted what I think are the things to take away from that AMA. There is a bunch of stuff there. Maybe you want to check it out. Aside from that, I need to thank you guys for watching. I think we got a maximum of about 16 watches, which I'm pretty happy about. I hope that people...
Thanks to Durin's sexy character.
Yeah, exactly. I hope people look back at this and go, oh, 16, haha, they had such a small crowd last time, and maybe this time they're going to have way more. No, I really have to thank the couple of guys who showed up for watching our show. And, of course, I have to thank you guys.
Yeah, that didn't quite work out as well as I hoped.
I have to thank Durin for driving. You've done a fantastic job, especially just
like
then.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Durin's character for being in a very attractive pose for us for about 5 minutes. I think that was arguably the highlight of the beta weekend.
Absolutely.
And something I will not be telling ArenaNet about because I want to see it more, because it was hilarious.
So go around the table for plugs. I'm Sofibsosiniki. You can contact us on thelincolncast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @thelincolncast. We'll also be moving our YouTube channel from my personal one, which is Sofibsosiniki, to thelincolncast starting this week. I'll post more about that later. But aside from that, thanks for viewing. Nubarama, do you have any plugs?
Well, I'd like to plug my original Guild Wars character, Bro Han Solo, for free stuff. Yeah!
Wow, you're not going to plug this one for the weekend? All right, I'm going to move on. No, I'm not going to let you do it.
Why would I plug for something that only happens in a beta? That disappears. All
Shadow of the World? Do you have anything to plug? Or anything to
say? Oh, plug! Can I plug? Wait. Address. Address of the person or any information on who made these changes.
Chef?
I just want to plug the other podcast I do occasionally, the Mighty Electronic Box
what?
For an iTunes.
Scumbag!
I actually have something to plug.
So repeat that again, just so people can hear it properly.
It's the Mighty Electronic Box. We are on iTunes. Please check us out. We talk about games and shit, and sometimes North Korea.
Fantastic.
Yes! All right, I'll do that.
Games, shit, and North Korea. I'm in.
And Ramen, yeah. Do you have anything to plug?
Because this is my first time, I'd actually like to ask if you'd like to see me back in general, like all three of you, whether you'd like to hear me come back again. And
I would love to get you on. I would say that you should at least play maybe about 20 hours of this beta and get some
significant
opinions on each point. But yeah, if you touch into World vs. World PvP and PvE, then I'm definitely happy to get you on. You're great. You're a great guest.
All three.
That's what I expect from my guests. I have small, you know, low expectations. I just want 20 every hour of your time and maybe to play a video game. But anyway.
What's your favorite kind of ramen?
The zoomy kind. I'd like to thank EDS Knight as well, because he was chatting away in the Twitch TV.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much.
And Shinboy, absolutely. Shinboy 630. Like a pro.
Yeah, Shinboy, yeah.
Did he end up playing Doran?
Yeah, he's on right now, I believe.
Oh, sweet.
Fantastic.
Oh, and I like miso ramen. Miso ramen.
And Durin, do you have anything to plug?
Just this channel. Like when we're not doing this live show, I totally do stream other games as well as this game when I'm playing. Like when this game is going, I'm probably going to be streaming this. But otherwise, like, I'll totally be streaming all kinds of stuff. Lots of Diablo 3 lately, and I'm just going to go kill myself now because I got into a bad spot.
And fantastic. With that, I'd like to thank you. This was the Linking Cast. Probably going to be, I'm going to call it Linking Cast Episode 7. I'm going to throw this up. Hopefully, I'm going to try and throw this up on the RSS. If not, I'm going to throw up a pointer on the RSS. And catch us next week for episode 8. We'll talk about our beta.
Are you guys still going to be playing this game? I'm going to play a bit more before I go to bed.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I'm going to go to bed.
I'll probably turn the stream off, but yeah.
It's totally 4:35.
Oh, grim.
Jesus.
Don't say that.
Anyway, thanks for listening, and that is goodbye.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.